awesome.
Oh, I forgot to turn off the effects. Sorry.
Possibly live from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center in Trophy Club, Texas. It's the definitive quasi-independent podcast covering your world champion Dallas Mavericks and the NBA. It's the Mavericks Outsider Report. I'm Rylan Rowe. I do sports when I'm not playing with a mixer and doing Leonard Davis bits. With me, as always, is the man at the helm, the mild-mannered reporter. Your mama calls him Brian. He's just that kind of a guy. Ballin' with Brian, Mr. Brian Gutierrez of MavsFastBreak.com and Mavs.com. Not with us today, Irving's own belligerent ball fan, Tim Koger. He is in Maui, and he is tweeting all about it.
Fellas.
We're doing well.
Lucky him.
So,
I hope it doesn't rain.
Glad to see everybody here. I kind of hope it. Yeah, no. Yeah. Don't want to. He spent a lot of money.
Yeah.
Don't want to ruin that.
That's a pretty penny.
Episode 56. Here we are.
Old school.
Going old school. Two-man booth. April 17th, 2012, from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center. Talking hoops.
It's almost done.
Talking Mavs.
This season is almost done.
The compressed.
Suppressed.
Suppressed. Weird schedule is almost over. We got five games or four games?
Four.
Four games remaining. And
I hope that's right.
I just, honestly, it can't get over quick enough for me. It really can't. And this is coming from someone
who loves
basketball.
Loves him some basketball.
It's just been a weird year. Disassembling the TJBC on the fly here. It's just been a weird year. Weird things have been happening. The quality of play is not up to par. Things just aren't as they should be. Every team is affected one way or another by this schedule, and I just have mega schedule fatigue, man. I just do. It's just a screwed up year. And the players, you can sense it from the players, everybody involved in the organization. I'm just excited about potentially ending it.
I was talking to our friend Mark Falwell coming over to the TJBC this afternoon, and he said that the team did not get back into Dallas until
2:53.
Yeah.
I saw him tweet that.
That's rough.
That's brutal.
Especially after playing.
That's what happens when you play 15 extra minutes.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a problem. But yeah, this season's been rough. As fans, it's been rough, but once you think about it, it's got to be even that much more taxing for the players, taking everything into account. So it's been a wacky year, and the perfect segue is a wacky event from last night. And that was obviously the actions of one Delonte West. And this was with about three and a half, maybe 4 minutes left in the first half of the game. Against Utah, which we'll recap later. He had a foul on Hayward, Gordon Hayward. If you don't remember him, he was the kid from Butler who almost surprised Duke.
Take me through this because I actually didn't see the first three and a half quarters of the game. So
okay.
It happened before I started watching. So I don't know what happened leading up to the incident.
There wasn't really any back and forth leading up to it. It just seemed like West sort of had a moment where he just sort of lost it.
They weren't getting a little bit physical
with each other.
It wasn't
that chippy. I mean, you think of Gordon Hayward.
You're not going to think chippy. You know, I was thinking he looks like he could be Marko Jarić's little brother. He reminds me of Marko Jarić without his eyes just aren't as beady.
And he doesn't have an amazing wife.
Nobody's eyes are as beady as Marko Jarić.
You know who Marko Jarić's wife is.
We talked about it before. It's some supermodel.
Adrian Lima.
Something. Oh, that's her?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Whatever, dude.
So nothing really led up to it, but for some reason, West just sort of flung his arm out in Hayward's direction, and it led to a foul. And then as this is going on, West sort of turns away and then turns back towards Hayward, walks up, gets the finger out, goes right into the ear.
He ear-holed him.
Pretty much. On the first try, which is incredibly impressive.
That is. You know what? That makes me think of, I don't know if this happens to you, but a lot of times I'll be in a hurry or just going about my normal daily tasks in a brisk pace, and I'll be getting into my truck, and I'll have my keys out of my pocket, and I'll sit down in the truck, I'll close the door, and from 3 feet out, I'll just go shoom right into the keyhole.
First shot.
Do you have that?
It happens sometimes.
It's because the muscle memory.
Right.
I have how many days of the same, you know, been driving the same vehicle for 10 years, same, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's been practicing his ear holing. I mean, or whatever we're going to call it, ear hole, West Willie, dry Willie.
I'm going with dry Willie.
I have a verb. I'm going to actually call it daping because of what Matt we're going to see later. I mean, he made up a verb.
Yeah.
Dape don't lie.
That's true.
So he daped him. It's kind of like dapping him, but different because it's negative.
Yeah.
Daped him.
And then he
taped him right in the ear hole.
He did it pretty aggressively, too, to the point where
he was like going to push his head away.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, he had this just. That's another reason to love Delonte. Knowing, obviously, that it's not like he, you know, undercut a guy in the air. It's not like he grabbed at his gonads like Reggie Evans. It's not like he, you know, rolled up under somebody or
not an aggressive clothesline.
It's not like he jerked on a guy's previously injured shoulder a la Karl Malone doing to Dirk back in 2000 or 01 whenever Nelly wanted to fight Malone in Utah, by the way.
Right.
It's none of those things. It was aggressive and yet at the same time
childish
and funny and you know no great harm was going to come from it. And so that just makes it the perfect taunt to me.
I think
reason to love Delonte.
I think the perfect thing about it was that it was in Utah. And like you discussed, Utah and Dallas just don't get along.
You've had the Karl Malone thing when Nelly bellied up to him. You had Kirk Snyder and Jerry Stackhouse under the stands.
Parking lot.
In like 04-ish, 05, somewhere in there. Dirk said Utah is a bad city.
Stackhouse said they
wrong
played
on several levels geographically among them.
And didn't Stackhouse say they played coward basketball or something like that?
And yeah,
Sloan basketball.
I mean, it's been a long storied history of beef.
So I think we should go ahead and go to the audio.
We need to hear.
If you
haven't heard this already, you need to hear, especially those of you who are in places far flung and not here local and didn't get a chance to hear the audio that on Ben and Skin this morning or any of the other local places. You need to hear the way that the Jazz TV guys called this. I don't know who there
is.
Is it Hot Rod Hundley?
No.
It's not him anymore?
I think it's Jake
or
Bullard.
Was he the color guy?
Bullard, former player, and then Matt Harpering.
Matt Harpering, we all know.
Yeah.
I don't know a Bullard that was a former player.
I think it was Houston.
That would be
Matt
Bullard.
Yeah,
so they're both named. So Matt Bullard's doing play-by-play?
I think so.
He's not doing a color?
I think so.
Huh. Who knew? But
so,
I do know Harpering. Harpering was actually, I liked him.
Really?
Was gritty.
Too gritty.
Throw them bows at you a little bit.
Too gritty.
But before he was injured, before he got
hurt.
He
could play.
In that 02, 03, 04 time frame. He was a very versatile small forward. He played defense. He was gritty. He could score 13, 14 a game and very efficient, kind of mid-range. I liked him. I was one of the guys I would have loved to have seen on Dallas during that stretch because they didn't have very many, you know, get-in-your-face kind of guys.
See, I just remember the tail end of Harpering's career where he just pissed everyone off.
Do you have the drop of Marion saying, he's just a baby?
I could find it. But yeah, this is the Utah.
Brian's just a baby. He doesn't
just
remember when before Harpering got hurt. Every guy in his family played college football, basically. That was always the excuse.
Yeah. I was trying to find that real quick. But anyway, here's the Utah broadcast of, this is leading up to the foul and then what transpired afterwards.
Oh.
Is that me?
No, it's me. Try again.
Okay.
Womp, womp.
Hold on. Let me go back. All right, let's go.
Short rebound, Jefferson. Quickly finds Devin Harris. Runs it across Nowitzki. And there's a foul on Delonte West trying to slow down Hayward. That's three on Delonte. How about that?
Tell me the referee.
Okay, so first.
Yeah, just pause. I'll pause whenever you need it.
So first, you hear the outrage of the crowd. Eruption. Total eruption. And you know what? That is fine. I give Utah's crowd and San Antonio's crowd and OKC and Portland, all those single market teams or single team markets, I always get on their crowd, especially Utah and San Antonio, because, you know, you look at somebody wrong and they just think it's the greatest injustice. But if somebody does something to one of your guys, that's the first thing every guy in there does, stands up and goes, what? What's going on? Team up! You know, so I love that. I just love the outrage from 20,000 people simultaneously. And if you're listening and not watching, you're thinking, oh, boy, what just happened?
So it's Utah going crazy, so let's keep going.
The referee didn't see that.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, that is he should be thrown out of the ball game right there. Cheap shot.
No.
Timeout.
No.
Thrown out of the game.
Do you really think anybody thinks that that's something you throw somebody out of a game for?
No. You definitely get a T for that.
Oh, sure. Of course.
But you don't get thrown out.
No question. No question you get a T. I mean, I don't know the rule book on ejections. It's just a gut. I mean, I've watched enough basketball that I can tell you. I don't know what the letter of the law says, but, you know, that's no different than pushing a guy in the chest or, you know, extending your arm, pushing him away or whatever. Did Reggie Evans get thrown out of the game for the nut grab?
I don't think so.
No. I think he almost went unnoticed. Of course, that was in a scrum and a play at the basket.
And that's kind of how this one went, because the referees were like, what just happened? The crowd's going nuts. They really didn't know what was going on. Because this is going on a dead ball situation. So then the refs have to be like, what just happened? We got to go look at the film. So,
Jed get thrown out for his nut punch on Finley? I think he did.
I think.
I know he for sure got suspended the next game.
I think that was near the end of the game.
Was that a flagrant one and he stayed in the game?
Yeah.
And then they suspended him for the next game? I think that's what it was, too. So, again, there's no precedent for any. I mean, this is not a major. What are they thinking?
And this is on a much smaller scale compared to the
like
nut.
It's not like he did the thing you see on 2020 where they're teaching the women self defense and they make a little they make a little cone out of their hand and like hit the attacker, you know, the guy wearing the big styrofoam head. You know, they kick him in the gonads and then they hit him in the eye with that.
Right.
If you do that, okay.
That's a problem.
I'm gonna say go ahead and throw him out.
But not here.
Not an ear hole.
Okay.
Not in the biggest way.
And how still booing.
Officials miss it?
Sustained
this is
booing.
Inexcusable if an official did not see this.
What is that about? That is the low of lows of sportsmanship.
No.
I don't know if I've ever seen that in professional sports. A finger in the ear.
The tape doesn't lie.
Dape doesn't lie, Brian.
I know.
He daped him. He just came out of nowhere. He blindsided the guy and daped him.
And you can
right
still,
in the ear.
And you can still hear booing throughout
I
all
mean,
of this.
Consistent sustain. Is he just pandering to the audience at that point?
Maybe.
I mean, I hope.
And then
the play-by-play
right.
guy. I mean, Harpring didn't have as much. All Harpring said was, whoa, I can't believe the ref didn't see that, which they eventually, you know, made the right call anyway. And then Harpring later says Dape doesn't lie. He was just searching for something to say because his buddy's over here going off like Joe Buck on Randy Moss's fake mooning.
And then Delonte chimes in if it'll pop up.
Yeah, what's up, fellas?
That's all he got on that.
He's live right now.
Yeah. So.
So Delonte did not get thrown out of the game. There was a flagrant. So be it. That's life. What you gonna do?
And he didn't really take it back.
Another reason to love Delonte. He did come out after the game and was like, "Hey, I lost control. I lost my head a little bit, you know." But come on, that happens to a lot of guys. I mean, Dirk got a T late in the game. He didn't ear hole somebody. He just didn't do it as creatively.
Yeah, he just yelled at the official.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
about it.
That's boring.
Yeah,
cussing at the official. That's like.
Excuse me.
That's version 0.1 of how to get a tech, you know?
They're going to have to make a rule now. It's going to be the
Giving
Delonte.
Someone an aggressive, dry, wet willy is is one of a kind. We'll never see anything like this again.
And I've got to make...
I'll go out on a limb here and say that...
Never again?
We witnessed something that will only happen once in the history of the NBA.
That's hard to say, but that's,
Delonte
that's probably
West
a
made
safe,
history.
Safe bet.
And Dallas Mavericks history right here.
It has already made its way to the J. I'll let you know. The wet willy has made it to the J.
Of course.
Ben Rogers got me with the
was
the dry.
Oh,
it was a
dry. Okay.
But
okay.
Then I got Ben with the wet.
I was going to say.
I got Ben with the wet willy.
It's okay to do the wet if you're retaliating, but you can't step. You can't immediately escalate the offenses out of nowhere. Because then it's not funny. It's funny to imitate.
And then we brought it up before we started playing, so the premise was set, but I just lost my focus momentarily.
You forgot that basketball is a gentleman's game.
And then when it's a dead ball, you're just talking and stuff like that, and then you're like, boop. And then, like, two games later, I was like, oh, no. And then I got him with, again, it was retaliatory, so I got him with the wet woolly.
Well, I'm glad that you stood up for yourself, if nothing else.
I did, but then he dominated me in the low block.
Well, look, dude, we are about ready to take a break and get into recapping some games that included four overtimes in 2 days.
Rough. It was interesting basketball. I know you wanted to see some things out of this hair-raising, chest-blazing
I did.
Trip.
And I'm going to tell y'all on the other side of this break whether or not I saw what it was that I wanted to see.
I'm interested to hear your answer.
When I saw it. But first, a break.
Mavericks Outside Report.
Okay. Welcome back, Mavericks Outsider Report, episode 56. In full swing here.
I'm gonna have to go Dirk a little bit.
You might just have to kick it.
I'm tired, dude.
You just need to lean back.
2 hours of full court basketball.
I understand.
4-on-4.
I understand. I love 4-on-4.
I love it, too.
Honestly, I would prefer to play 4-on-4 over 5-on-5 if I'm just going to go play pickup. It opens things up. It's not like everybody's so highly skilled that they can find a good place on the spacing on the floor and, you know, just the whole idea of being effective from any point on the court is not something most guys playing pickup can do. So when you're 4-on-4, everything's just a little more open. I like it.
I like it a lot.
And you run a little more.
I ran a lot today. So
that's probably why you're playing in the first place if you're playing pickup.
And it's going again tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be a rough day for me for running. I have to do an interview. I have to play basketball and then the game. So that's going to be a long day. I know.
It's tough.
It is.
Yep. So MOR is back, fully bearded, at least on my side of the studio.
Half beard.
Of the Ted Jones Broadcasting
this
Center.
This is day 67 of my Rubio beard.
Day 67 of Brian's Rubio beard. We are getting ready to cover the four games that were played in the last week. Tim is in Maui.
He doesn't care.
Screw that guy.
He doesn't care. He's
screw
like,
that guy.
What's basketball right now? I'm
so,
on a beach.
Mavs had a 4-game and 5-night road trip. Back to back, followed by a back to back, and ended up 2-2.
Happy with the 2-2? That's the big question.
No, I'm not. I'm not sad about the 2-2. I'm not sad.
Okay,
but I'm not happy with it. I am neutral with it, and I think the reason I'm neutral with it is because I felt like the Mavericks treaded water. And I'm not just saying that based on the win and loss record. I think if you look at the way they played, there was not any significant deviation from the last few weeks. Now, they had a little better energy, I will say that, but you know, they didn't have sustained periods of higher execution. They were still pretty up and down. Defensively, there were still some issues. Defensive rebounding was a major issue in a couple games.
Yes.
And that's a problem. That's going to be a big problem in the playoffs and even in this last stretch of the season when you're trying to set up your seeding. So the problem was Golden State pushover team. Portland with no Aldridge pushover.
I didn't even know about the Aldridge thing until the day of.
Yeah, neither did I.
Yeah.
So Tim and I were saying before he went off on vacation, we were saying at work that once we heard about Aldridge, was like, well, that kind of sucks because if the Mavs play well, you can't say, oh, you learned a whole lot from it because Portland was missing their horse.
Right.
And if they play okay and Portland plays them tough, you just go, well, Portland plays everybody tough at the Rose Garden and you just move on. So it was almost like Golden State wasn't a good enough team to get anything from analytically. Portland was not a good enough team to get anything from analytically because of Aldridge being out. And then L.A., you're in L.A., and then you have no Kobe. So that's a lose-lose because if you win, you were supposed to win with Kobe, and you're not really sure how you stack up. If you lose, then you just lost to a Kobe-less Laker team, which everybody looks at, and even though they have a really deep team all of a sudden. And so there's all
and
that.
And they're winning without Kobe, too.
Yeah, so the only measuring stick game, honestly, was Utah. That was the only measuring stick game. And what you found in the measuring stick game was that the same problems that the Mavericks have had all the way along more or less plagued them to the point of being dead smack but even with a team on the bubble.
And a desperate team.
And yeah, and so I think that, again, just shows you that Dallas is somewhere in that vast expanse of mediocrity between a tick below Memphis and a tick below Utah when they're playing well. Not Utah on the sum of the whole season, because they've had ups and downs that are even worse than Dallas. I mean, there was a point in time where they didn't look like they were going to make anything of the year.
Well, then,
and vice versa, there were other points in the year where you thought they might actually stick.
Do you think the? Because to me, Dallas didn't need to exert as much energy as they did in the second half against Utah, because they played so lethargic in the first half.
Yeah,
so. Would you say that, would you take any, would you hold your opinion a little bit based off the fact that they had the overtime game the day before?
Yeah, a little.
A little?
A little bit. And again, that screws up. I was talking about the sample and how the sample's contaminated because of everything. You try to use Utah as the measuring stick, but even that's contaminated to some degree because of that. Even though it was a no Kobe game and in L.A. and second night of a back-to-back, the Mavericks have played fairly well on second nights of back-to-back all year. So, I mean, you don't look at that as a crutch when you're trying to look back at the game and say, what have we learned here? But, yeah, the fact that everybody had to play long minutes again, you know, and then no Roddy meant your guards all got extra run. So, you know, nothing significantly changed for Dallas on this. And it's nice not to have Odom out there gunking up the works when he's on the court. And, you know, the extra minutes for Wright when he's not overpowered by size mismatches, which other than L.A., that's not really a problem, I guess, in the Western Conference for him.
In terms of teams that they'll play, Memphis would be a problem.
Yeah.
I think that's it, though.
Well, would Memphis be a problem?
It could be.
Zebo sure didn't look like he was moving very
well. But
if he's gonna
have to play the five, because Saul could push him over a little bit.
Oh, and he's wiry.
He can get in and out.
I'm thinking of him
as a four
in his newly found quasi backup four and quasi backup five or quasi third string five. Mixture role there. But you're right about that. But then again, you know, if he's playing third string five and second string four, you don't have to have him out there when Gasol's out there. LA's got so much size and skill everywhere. You're hosed.
Looking at the last two games where they played four overtimes in 2 days, the minutes piled up in a massive, massive way for your big three.
Jason Kidd played 600 minutes in one game.
No, that's not true, actually.
He played 500 minutes
in
one game.
No, you're way cold. Jason Kidd played 84 minutes.
That's a lot of basketball.
84 minutes. That's
a lot of basketball on those old wheels, man.
Jason Terry played 90. Just under 91 minutes.
91 minutes.
And then Dirk played just under 96. 96 minutes in less than a day and a half, basically.
Do you worry, like some, about the lasting effect of that?
I only worry about it in the short term. I worry about it tomorrow.
Right. For me, it affects the Houston game, and that's it.
That's it. Honestly, yeah.
And Houston's got to do a lot to...
I found a website.
To come out of it. Wow.
That's a random... I found a website.
You just totally derailed my entire thought there with that amazing discovery.
You can mark that.
I was going to say, Houston's got to do a lot... Or they have a lot more to worry about than just Dallas with Phoenix tied with them now. Who has the tiebreaker between Phoenix and Houston?
Oh, good question.
But my point is they've got their hands full and they've just lost four in a row.
Between Houston and Phoenix?
Yeah.
Phoenix.
Okay, so... Well, that's what I thought. I just wanted to double check. So my point that I was trying to get at was Houston has their hands full.
And going back off of what you said is I found a website on the internet, and it talked about and it's called
Hashtag, oh, no, you didn't.
I did, Bob. It's playoffstatus.com, and it pulls up your percentages of
Your probabilities of landing. Yeah, Baseball Prospectus does that for baseball.
So for right now, for the Mavericks, they have no chance at all of making the four seed. Absolutely no chance.
Mathematically impossible.
They have a less than 1% chance to make the one or the five seed.
It really doesn't matter at this point.
Doesn't matter, Avery. You're thinking about the lottery right now. Sixth seed, they have a 51% chance, but it's not in their destiny. It's not; they don't control their own destiny in terms of the sixth seed. The 7th and 8th seed, they clearly do. The 7th seed, they have a 34% chance of making the 7th spot, 11% for the 8th, and they only have a 4% chance to not make the playoffs.
Right. I mean, they have to pretty much lose every game, and then Houston and Phoenix can't stumble.
And looking at Houston
at all, they have to really, you know, play the string out. I don't know if the Mavericks would have to go 0-4, but
pretty damn close.
0-4 or 1-3 with everything else running perfect for the other two teams.
For Houston, who's currently on the outside, they only have a 3% chance to make the 6th seed, a 10% chance to make the 7th seed, a 21% chance to make the playoffs. And the odds are saying 66% of the time they will not make the
playoffs.
Boy,
that tiebreaker is a bitch.
It hurts. It hurts.
They've got to be hating what's just – I mean, we're all like down and blah, blah, blah about the Mavericks season and everything. It's been a frustrating year for Mavericks fans coming off of what happened last year and everything. But how would you like to be Houston?
They almost got Gasol.
In the playoff picture this whole time, you almost got Gasol. Yeah, which would have at this point, aren't you kind of wishing it had just happened?
Maybe.
The way he's been playing against the Mavs lately.
And then Odom wouldn't have come to Dallas.
Yeah.
That's a segment right there in itself. What would have happened?
We should throw that out at Mark or Skin or somebody next time we have him.
Both of their heads will explode.
That's a hellacious hypothetical. Anyway, we can sit here and him and haw over, you know, our first world problems, but Houston has been in the picture all year. And I was at first I was kind of down and saying, "Oh, they're doing it with smoke and mirrors or whatever," but watching them and you know, they're legit. They're a team of depth and balance, and they don't have superstars. They have a lot of guys who do several things fairly well. It's
been dealing with injuries too.
And they've had injuries to deal with. But think about it, you're a Houston fan, you've been in the mix all year. Now all of a sudden you get to April 4th and you lose four games in a row.
And you lose two in a row to Denver.
Yeah.
And a home and home, you lose both to Denver. So we talked about Phoenix or Houston's chances. Phoenix's go up slightly better just because of that tiebreaker. The 6th seed, they only have a 2% chance to make the 6th seed. 7th seed, they have a 9% chance. 8th seed, it's a 32% chance, and they have a 56% chance of not making the playoffs. But for that 8th seed, they have a 32% chance, while Houston only has a 21% chance. So that tiebreaker plays a massive role.
That tiebreaker just dictates everything there.
And so let me tell you this, or let me ask you this, since we brought these numbers up off the internet. So the Mavericks have a 51% chance of making the 6th seed, but it's out of their – they don't control their destiny. And it's 34% for the 7th seed. Which one do you think likely happens?
Give me the 7th. I don't want L.A.
What if they fall back?
Then – you mean what if L.A. falls back and the Clippers catch them?
Yeah.
Ain't happening.
But what if it did?
Then I would say damn. But because I – even though there's a lot of people who are like, "Oh, I don't want the Clippers." Give me the Clippers.
There's an 18% chance that the Clippers can move up to the 3 seed.
Give me Blake Griffin and Chris Paul over Kobe Powell and Bynum. Come on.
And you won Vinny.
And, right, exactly. You know what's you're his name? Win. Well, with Rick Carlisle, you're going to win the coaching battle in every matchup except San Antonio, and you're going to be fighting.
Was that Chachi? Joni loves Chachi.
Who? What?
Vinny Del Negro. See Scott.
What's Scott Baio?
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
A little Scott Baio.
A little. Okay.
Little Scott Baio.
Okay. Tangent.
Big time.
My bad. What were we talking about?
I want to ask you, before we wrap up talking about the week of games that we just saw, what did you get out of it? Did you feel like you learned anything?
The biggest thing that I learned...
Worthwhile?
I think they had great momentum to start it, and it helped playing Golden State, but as the four games drew along, they got progressively worse.
It's like a little, just a balloon with the air slowly being let out. You know, Portland... They had the game in hand and almost peed it away.
It was game four.
It was that template.
But no Brandon
Roy. I didn't expect
Roy.
Them to come to sustain a 24-point lead for a quarter and a half, but I certainly expected them to be able to, you know, rest some guys in the fourth and have a 13-14-point win or whatever. That didn't happen. You know, they had to fight for everything they got there and barely came out of there with a win. And after that, it's just like, ugh. You know, that just left a bad taste. Without Aldridge, then you turn around and you knew with L.A. it's a lose-lose situation because of Kobe being out, but them still playing well. Ron Artest is playing well. Matt Barnes.
He's playing well.
Matt Barnes always finds a nut against Dallas.
What did you think about that the what was it, the first three by Gasol that led to the interference?
Okay.
Before you go into that, my thought was that they just got progressively worse as the trip went along.
They did. Yep. They did. They did. Here, you've watched a lot of NBA games. I've watched a lot of NBA games. People who listen to this podcast have watched a lot of NBA games throughout their life. We know that an offensive player or a defensive player can inadvertently just brush the bottom of the net in such a way that it has no effect on the shot. To me, how does touching the net affect the ball unless you touch the ball? It doesn't.
Right.
How does touching the net, unless you grab the net and actually
move
the stanchion in some way, how does that affect the shot? Yet, categorically, it's like a kid bringing a gun to school. It's like, that's got to be goaltending. You know, offensive basket interference immediately. You know, it's like a zero tolerance rule. And yet, we have a guy shooting a three. Home dude gets his hands up over the cylinder and is in there.
Mm-hmm.
And his hand was in the cylinder even if he didn't touch the ball.
Right.
Which I don't think that's the rule. I think you have to touch the ball. But it was so on top of it. I don't understand how they can be so categorically zero tolerance for, you know, a gust of wind brushing the net and yet not make that call. But you know what? If Gasol is going to make two threes when he's made 26 in his entire life, you aren't winning that game.
Yeah.
And if Dirk's going to go 9 of 28, you aren't winning that game.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like you were saying, I don't want to see the Mavericks have any part of the Lakers at all. Even with Kobe being involved, he might change the dynamics between Barnes and Meta World Peace or Ron Artest, pick your name, but still, that's a problem either way because of Bynum and Gasol. But
they're a matchup problem.
I don't see this
of the worst kind.
Right. I don't see this 4-game stretch as a net loss. It's just a
Treading water.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I felt. I didn't see anything to encourage me. I didn't see anything to make me think any less of their chances. It's just they're kind of in the middle, you know, somewhere in the great unwashed middle, and we don't know kind of what's going to happen, and it could go one way or another based on whether or not guys are hot or cold or healthy or not. And they're having trouble sustaining significant stretches of elite basketball and execution down the stretch. And that's the hallmark of a team. It's a hallmark of a 6-seed, 7-seed. So it is what it is.
It is what it is. And Jason Kidd was actually one of the biggest culprits in Utah with the lack of execution. And he actually made some news last week while we were still on the air talking about his desire to play another year. And we're going to discuss whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. That's coming up after the break. Mavericks Outsider Report.
Little Red Hot Chili Peppers there for you on the break. Mavericks Outsider Report, episode 56. Ted Jones Broadcasting Center.
Love music. Love the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes, sir. Going to see them at the AAC October 9th.
When is October? Wow, that's far away.
That is far away. It was supposed to be in March, but Anthony Kiedis broke his foot and they postponed a bunch of shows.
Who's opening?
It was Janelle Monáe. Who I don't
know. Oh, really, I know her.
Know
I
much
know
about her.
I know one song from her.
And so, yeah, there's that. so I don't know who's opening now. When I saw them, the first time I saw them, it was they were doing a double bill with the Foo Fighters.
Nice.
Yeah.
That was a while ago.
That was May 2nd, 2000.
That's a while ago. Man, that would have been a good show.
I think it May 2nd, 2000.
See,
yeah,
I was really getting my hopes up because Incubus is going to tour this summer, and there's all these rumors on the internet. I find websites.
Right.
There were rumors that this...
What?
Oh, sorry, Mark.
the internet, Mark.
There's these rumors that there would be a co-headlining tour between the Foo Fighters and Incubus. And those are
and
my
you
two...
would just be...
Oh, my gosh.
Your head would explode.
I wouldn't even be here right now.
Yeah.
So that actually changed where it's a co-headlining tour now between Incubus and Linkin Park. I'm not so excited about that.
Nah.
Linkin Park's okay.
That whole hard rock rap sort of guy just slamming on the base instead of playing it. That thing sailed 10 years ago.
Well,
dude.
He's slapping it down there. He needs to slap it up here.
Yeah. Yes. I'm saying slap a little funk bass.
It's on my chin.
Yes,
basically.
That's okay. But just this, you know, that clack clack, like the guy from Korn. All he does is go click 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 click. Dude, that's percussion. Okay. Let me let you in on a little something. You don't even have to move your left hand to do that crap. Okay. That was one genre. I'm all into all kinds of music. You guys hear the return music
Good
we play
stuff.
Here. I go all over the map. But that whole hybrid of I'm mad at the world, teenager rock with a little bit of rap involved with, I should say I'm mad at the world, teenager metal more so. Because it kind of has the
metal. I hate my father.
Kind of has a little bit of that metal ethos surrounding it or whatever. But yeah, so not my thing at all.
So I'm not sure if I'm actually I'm not sure if I'm going to see this tour, but they have a box set coming out this summer.
And you're going to camp out and get a copy.
It's a ridiculous amount of stuff. It's going to ruin my bank account.
It'll ruin your bank account and
for sure
take up your whole summer. But that's not why we're here.
We haven't done these tangents in a while.
No, it's been there's too many damn games.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Jason Kidd. And he said, Brian, as you reported in our last segment, he said last week that he was interested in playing another year. That's consistent with some of the things he said in previous years that he wanted to play till he was 40. He's 39 now. And so your question was, do you take him back if you're Donnie Nelson?
Yes.
What do you think? Before I go into my theory, what do you think?
Well, to add more to the story, and this was Mark Stein that reported it from ESPNtheworld.com, saying that one source close to the situation asked if bringing back Kidd remains part of their plans, said absolutely. And furthermore, team sources said that Kidd would happily move into the backup role should the Mavericks win the Darren Williams.
Yeah, he's almost, I don't know if he's said that in those words, but if he hasn't actually said that directly, he has come as close as possible to saying that. They have the same agent. They're golfing buddies. He's said good things about him.
They've said good things
about each other. Yeah. I swear there is somewhere with him on record, maybe from the Team USA time, I don't know, but there is Jason Kidd's on record somewhere saying he would love to back up Darren Williams.
Right.
So, the question is, and you said it is in the Mavs' plans. I think it's in their plan. I think that's been their idea with this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And because if you get a stud point guard like D. Will, I mean, a stud point guard, so one of your top four or five
three.
In the league.
I'd say he's top three.
Right, but if you get someone in the top four or five who's kind of a do-it-all point guard, then you can roll Jason Kidd out there for 15 or 20 minutes.
At the most.
At the most. And that's great because you've got a guy, because you've got a do-it-all point guard, he's going to score, he's going to play D, and he's obviously going to run the offense. So that's an ideal situation. However, the condition has to be at what price? And I think it's going to have to be $3.5 million, $4 million tops, maybe less.
I wish I did research before the show. To how much
eight,
he
I
makes.
I believe it's eight.
Eight? This really?
I believe he took it down. In his last deal, he took a pretty significant cut.
I'll have to look that up.
Why don't you talk about your opinion and I'll look it up.
Again, it's really conditional, obviously, if you get Darren in the fold. If you don't, you really have to change your thought process on how you move forward.
If you don't get a do-it-all, all-star, all-world point guard, you can't afford to have someone so limited in your backup role.
And,
I say limited because he can only... it's not that he is that bad as a backup, but for an elite team, he needs to do less. You need somebody who's going to pick up the slack, and the Mavs need offensive
help. If you're an elite team and you say, man, we can bring Jason Kidd off the bench for 15 minutes, you should be considered an elite team when you have that because he can still play, but you have limited access with him.
$8.5
million. Man, that surprised me.
After his big deal with New Jersey ended year before last, which was about 20 per, he re-upped for Dallas, I want to say 2 for $18 million or 2 for $17 million
that's
or 2 for $16 million or something.
Me. Okay.
He gave him a discount. I mean, that's a smart thing to do. However, I think now, you know, 2 years ago he was an all-star.
Right.
You know, a very, very marginal all-star. But he's so limited now in what he can do, even though he's still an expert at running an offense and he can still do things defensively in very, very short spurts. His value has to be $4 million at most. And I would even honestly, if I'm the Mavs, if I'm trying to do what I think I'm trying to do, which is clear out, have D Will come in at a near max contract, $17 million, whatever. Mm-hmm. I've got Dirk sitting at 22, 21, whatever he's going to be at, and then I got to build everything else with that. I need impact players,
right?
And you know, is Sean Marion, has he abdicated himself enough this year that you want to keep him at 8.6?
I think he has.
I think it might be in the realm of possibility. But if you do that, you got to let Haywood go then. But mm-hmm. then what are you going to do for a center?
Right.
It's almost like Haywood at $8.5 million. It's not so bad.
It's not. It's really not.
So all those things have to come into play. And that being said, you're going to need every dollar of cap space to bring in significant impact players.
The way I look at it, now that I know that money of what he makes, which sounds weird to say, he's making eight.
At least you didn't write it.
Right. I would never write that. making eight, you said what, three, four-ish?
I'm thinking, yeah, honestly, I would like to see him at like $2 million, but I'm afraid that he wouldn't take that.
I kind of think he might. Just based off of the fact that
he already took a pay cut once.
Yeah, and that he...
I can hope so.
He knows he's near the end of his career. He knows probably the Mavericks have probably talked to him to some extent on, let's work on your long-term plan, so to say. If you want to be an assistant, you can do that. If you want to work in the front office, you can do that. If you want to do whatever and then play golf and then come here every 6 days, you can do that.
Yeah, I would assume that those kind of conversations have happened at a very casual level because he's still in the mode of being a player.
Right.
And when you're a player of that caliber in pro sports, you're not necessarily going to be thinking in too much detail about what you want to do when you're done. You're trying to do what you can do now. But I'm sure there have been little hints dropped here or there if there's mutual interest, which I'd assume there definitely is from the organization side. I just don't know what he wants to do with himself.
If you could get him around $2 million, you're set.
To me, that's ideal for what the Mavs need to do with their cap space this summer is to have him coming in at a $2 million or lower number. I just don't know if that's gonna work. You never know, man. You got the agent, you got the union. There's so many aspects that play into things. But if he will come for much less, if he's
involved,
then I think that's all part of the master plan that everybody's kind of hoping in the back of their mind comes together. But if it doesn't happen, if New Jersey trades for Dwight Howard and Williams decides to stay by some miracle, then you're going to be rebuilding your entire backcourt next year. Back up to front up.
Let me ask you this question then, since you brought it up, and then we'll move back to Kidd again. Okay, let's say the Williams plan doesn't work. So now you have to rebuild. Do you rebuild short-term or do you rebuild long-term? Short-term, your option is sign Steve Nash 1 or 2 year deal or sign Dragic for a 4 year deal. Which one would you do?
I'm taking Dragic.
Okay.
I'm taking Dragic because my theory is 4 years, Dirk's going to be really good for two of those at least. And then after that, it's a toss-up. We don't know, what's going to happen. And because of that, I want the ability to, if I have an opportunity, by hook or by crook, to acquire a major superstar player through trade, through free agency, whatever, trade exception, weird CBA wrinkle, whatever Donnie and Mark and those guys are so good at doing, you want to be able to, at a moment's notice, be ready to go from playoff team to contender. And if I'm going to do that, I cannot do that with Steve Nash as a bell cow on my team. I can do that with Steve Nash as a token backup, kind of like we're talking about with Kidd.
Right.
But at this point, I feel the same about both of them. Even though Nash is producing at a much higher level than Kidd is right now, and he's younger in basketball years than Kidd, even though they're the same age, because of his inability to play any defense, it has a different effect on the way you build the team. And that's why, for me, I'd love to see the guy finish his career here if he leaves Phoenix, but it doesn't make sense for what you need to do to put people around Dirk. Unless you bring D-Will in, or something happens and you don't bring D-Will in, but you make some blockbuster trade for another Haas guard, and the J. Kidd thing then doesn't work out. Then bring Nash in to be backup. That might work, but you can't have... If you're completely cleared out and you're trying to build your backcourt, Jason Kidd's gone. Jason Terry's gone. You don't know what you're going to do with Roddy. Dojo is not a factor. I mean, so at this point, you've got Azubuki. You know, that's it. So you're starting from scratch. I can't allow part of that to be a significant, I don't want to say monetary investment, but a significant player personnel slash role investment in Steve Nash because he's too one-dimensional.
I think
that'd be a disservice to Dirk. Even though Dirk and him are buddies, that's a disservice to the remainder of Dirk's career to say, we're just not going to play any defense for the next 2 years. I hope you shoot a lot of threes. You know, I can't do that.
I think the problem where I are you like 60-40 Dragic, or is it a dramatic?
I'm like 85-15.
Okay. I think it's...
And that's not so much, even though I like him as a player, that's not some great assessment of him as some kind of long-term answer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an assessment of him as a player who is, you know, I'm not saying he's Gary Payton, but he's damn sure going to play more D than Steve Nash.
Right. The way I look at it is I'd be concerned, but I would still probably take Dragic too, because at this point, you're saying Dragic is your more than likely big, quote-unquote, big free agent signing, which probably most people would say that that's the case because he's emerging as a player.
Yeah, but if you did that in the world of the fan and sports media, that would be, you would be roasted.
No, for sure.
There's no way that they would have to pitch him as the compliment, and then they would have to then, through free agency or trade, go try to acquire a bell cow. He wouldn't be able to be the guy you're going to put with Dirk.
Right.
He would be the guy you're going to put with Dirk and mystery player X. Planet X.
That's the only concern I have with it, is that you have more work to do afterwards.
Oh, yeah. You're setting yourself up for requiring another step after that. I like him. I've always liked him as a player. I think he plays hard. I think he's the kind of guy that gets under your skin if he's not on your team, and then you love him if he's on your team. I like those kind of guys. He does play two ways to some degree, not to the degree that maybe I would love, but definitely, you know, above and beyond Steve Nash or even Jason Kidd at this point, just because Kidd's production is so spotty.
With the production, I thought it was interesting last night. Folliwell said this, I think it was early in the broadcast, so I guess you missed it. Kidd's three-point numbers are better this year than last year, and that surprises me dramatically. When you look at his splits, he was shooting 43.5% in December, which is only four games. January, he shot 16%, but then it just gradually went up.
But he's not getting the opportunities because his minutes are being limited, and the ball movement is in no way, shape, or form at the level that it was last year. So his opportunities just aren't there.
He's only getting, post All-Star break, it's only about four and a half three-pointers attempted, which is kind of interesting in aspect, because it does go along the lines with the ball movement and so on and so forth. So
his production point-wise is, you know, career low, even though he's shooting from three better than he ever has, because we're not getting him the ball in those cushy spots like he used to get as often.
If you look back...
And maybe if he was shooting more, his percentage would regress back to what it was last year, so who's to say?
If you look back at 09-10, he was shooting 5.2 threes per game. Last year was 4.9, and this year it's 4.6. So it's interesting to see how that goes. And it does really tie together with the ball movement and so on and so forth. So I think we're in agreement where Kidd makes most sense as long as D-Wool's involved and you can get the right number, which I think if they have to bite their tongue a little bit, they can go more for the four-ish.
It can't go above four, though.
Right.
It just absolutely can't. I mean... You don't want to give yourself that much resource allocation over to Kidd, because you even if you get D. Will, you win the summer. If you sign Deron Williams, you win summer. Mm-hmm. You're the winner. Okay, you did it, but you've got a lot of work left to do because you don't have anybody really on your team at this point. You've got to figure out: are you keeping Haywood? Is Haywood plus a cheap the answer at center or no? And if not, then are you hanging on to Marion, or are you trying to trade him for a piece? And what kind of piece can you really trade him for? Is his value to the team greater than his value in getting a piece, even if you're trading him for some salary relief because of what the pieces are, and the fact that now, after you've brought D. Will in and you've given yourself ability to stay under the cap, you still now are playing for the next 2 to 3 years with Dirk. It's like this year is the transition, and everybody's talking about how the primary transition reasoning for it was to be in a world where you live under the cap. Well, that's fine. After this year, you're there. You've gotten there now. Mm-hmm. So now you have to go back to the original MO, which is I'm in my new world. I'm not going to go into consistent yearly luxury tax, you know. Oh, my God. Sometimes when I lose a word, I refuse to move forward until I find it. You're not going to luxury tax territory.
Okay.
But you have to maximize what's left of Dirk's career, mm-hmm. and D. Will gives you somebody to build around when he's gone for several years after that. But still, that changes the way you look at everything. So I don't know. I think it's up in the air. I mean, I keep thinking Marion's going to break down because he's old, but I feel like he keeps on sustaining, you know, his level of play. And Haywood is not, at least right now, not a bad value at $8.5 million a year for a legitimate center.
And that's the scary thing was what you brought up when you look at Haywood. The value makes sense, but what's the alternative? If you let him go, you're getting rid of one of your best value players at per position, and then you have to figure out what you're going to do.
He's a guy who you can roll with and throw a young guy like a Mahimi or a whomever in with him and make it work. If you let him go, you have to come around and come up with another steady solution. You have to come up with another guy you can count on in addition to a Mahimi type.
I think the answer could have been made easier if Jan made a giant step this year, but it hasn't.
No, it hasn't happened. No. I almost wonder if he's back next year.
Well, yeah, he's a free agent, so. And the way that Wright's been playing and he shows his versatility to play the 4 and the 5, it definitely makes him, sadly, expendable.
It almost makes you wonder if they're not going to go for, well, a lot of it's going to depend on what they're going to do with Haywood. But you know what? We can talk about that in May, June, July.
Hopefully.
And today we're going to talk about NBA Nuggets and things of that nature.
Okay. Or no, buy, sell, or hold.
Wow, the return of buy, sell, or hold comes up next after this break.
Mavericks Outsider Report. Hopefully it's not too loud. Tonight, now he's shook. Moving down the depth chart tonight. 3D playing third string, still without making. This makes me laugh. This music makes me laugh all the time. That's funny.
It is. It's entertaining. High quality. High quality stuff. I like the echo on that synth. Dun, dun it, dun, dun it. It's perfect. Perfect timing. Anyway, welcome back to Mavericks Outsider Report. Two man booth in effect today. I'm Rylan. He's Brian.
What does my mom call me?
Ballin'. No, your not mom. My mom. You Brian.
That was funny.
I know.
Yeah. All right. So we don't do this as much anymore because our ears are not very secure in what could happen. So we're going to go ahead and play our old game of buy, sell, and hold.
It always has that jump in volume.
Yeah.
Such a treacherous little lead-in there from you, Brian.
Yeah, I try.
The first time we ever played that, which is on an archive that is probably difficult to find now, probably about episode 4, everything, that was when we were still at the old place, everything redlined. Like, I think our ears started bleeding immediately.
I think I took it. Oh! it was a bad on my part. So buy, sell, or hold, bring up a subject, and we'll decide if we want to buy the concept of it, sell it, or hold it. And I thought of these earlier this morning, so it should be interesting.
I'm ready.
First one. Roddy Bubois has had a positive impact on the roster this season. Buy, sell, or hold.
I'm buying that.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not always a big Roddy apologist, but I think that he made, given where he ended last year, I think he made significant strides. And the reason I say that is because he had significant sustained stretches of good play and not all against crappy teams. Now, we can talk about how horrible he's looked in games against LA and some of the other, you know, powerhouse teams, although he's had some good games against San Antonio. But last year, well, not last year, but in his rookie year, he was awesome against scrubs, and that was it. This year, he's had games where he was serviceable. He's had games where he was steady. He's had games where he ran the offense fairly well late in games. He's had games where he rebounded well. He's had games where he scored efficiently and stayed away from the three. and he, you know, was able to penetrate on a more regular basis, which, you know, the coaching staff is, you know, completely up his butt on, I'm sure, every minute of every day.
Are they in his ear like Delonte?
They are in his ear like Delonte. So, all that being said, given how much of a unmitigated disaster last year was with the injury that lingered and lingered and re-injured, and then his, you know, the way he just single-handedly turned the fortunes of the team when he came back. If you'll remember the huge spike in turnovers and dip in offensive efficiency and dip in defensive efficiency immediately after he started playing again. All those things considered, to come back this year and have good stretches, I'm pleased. He impacted the roster in a positive fashion. Now, if your question was, is he a keeper? I'm probably selling. And not only am I probably selling, but I'm probably selling now, but I'm damn sure wishing I was selling 2 years ago when everybody thought he was just, you know.
We won't trade him for incredible. Unless he's LeBron.
Yeah,
LeBron,
which is
Wade.
Just a bit to begin with. But yeah, what are you going to do? I just feel like he's made strides. The whole thing happening with his dad and the way he dealt with that and came back and played some of his best basketball. I mean, that's a good thing. That says a lot to me about who he is, which gives me more hope for the future than I would have otherwise have had, because I got a little glimpse into what makes him tick, and it was a good thing. It was positive. You couldn't really fault anything that happened through that whole deal. So for that, yeah, I say I'm buying that.
I would actually buy it too, because I was surprised that you bought it.
You were ready to go against me on this one.
Yeah, I've been thrown for a loop now. But pretty much everything you said, I agree with. He's made more in terms of positive strides. Still go back to, I think it was Tim. He might have tweeted it or something. That is he the Jason Garrett facsimile or something like that, where he needs to see more film.
Oh, because he has to watch tape every single day. Because the canard. We hear every time he plays well is, well, they sat him down and showed him some tape today. Well, is that just something we say on the broadcast because it helps to explain the whole way that they prepare for the game? Or do we really need to have him have a tape concierge that sits with him every day and says, look, there's you. There's the basket. Look what happened. You went to it and good things happened. I really, 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 really hope that they don't have to do that with him. I hope that it is an ongoing learning process, and it's more of a conditioning, mental conditioning thing where he just has to get used to doing it.
Well, my question would be to that is, maybe they have to because he's still so young.
He's not that young, though. I mean, I know he's
young. In basketball sense?
He's young in basketball years, but that's not fair because, what is he now, 24?
Yeah.
Okay. So we say he's 24, but, you know, he's only been playing for 6 years. And most guys, when they've been playing for 6 years, you know, they're 17.
This is awesome.
Shh. Anyway. That's just completely derailing me. Anyway, landline never rings.
And it's rang twice in the past hour and a half.
Yeah, so anyway. hang on. In the middle of a great point, and
that was a long message.
Landlines, man, get rid of them. And then we have this. And I'm afraid to do anything because I don't work old school stuff anymore. I don't deal with it. People call when I'm not home, and you look at it once a month, and you go, oh, wow, you know, we had a message from 3 weeks ago. We better listen to it. I know how to delete them. I don't know how to mute the damn thing. That's like when we were in fourth grade, and somebody would call, and you wouldn't answer, and everybody would go, shh, I want to hear what they say. Anyway, I'm in the middle of making a great point. Okay, what
he's young, but not young.
He's young, but he's not young, because we make that excuse for guys that are 6 years into basketball because they're in high school. Mm-hmm. When you are a grown-ass man, you can learn things faster. You can pick up on things faster. You can be more consistent because you're a grown-ass man. You are 24. You're a professional basketball player. I should not have to assign a 17-year-old's learning curve to you because you have a 17-year-old's level of experience. I can assign a 24-year-old's learning curve. I understand you still have less experience, but I can assign the learning curve of a grown man to you, and you need to figure it out. And there's some things he should have already figured out by now.
Man, she did that great.
She's gotten really good with the Jeep, the Wrangler. The Liberty, it was a toss-up. Like, every day, you never knew what was going to get hit. But the Wrangler, for whatever reason, it's basically the same size. It's a little bit longer, but she drives it like a champ. I don't know.
I agree with your point, but I also see that he's made dramatic steps, too.
That's why I bought, because last year was such a just turd.
I remember there was instances last year where he had to split double teams, and he did not know what to do. Or he was going off a pick and roll, and he didn't really know what
to
do.
Or he would try to split a double team that he had no business splitting, and he would just lay the ball out there for him to later
and then
catch up to.
Did like a matrix kind of move to try to get through.
And you're like, no, that works, and that works if you're playing with a bunch of guys from Guadeloupe because you're 10 times faster than all of them. But that's not working at the NBA. Yeah.
So I'm surprised that you actually bought that.
Hey, man.
Hey.
I like to throw a curveball every once in a while.
Next option. Delonte West needs to return to the Mavericks next season.
Depends on how you build the roster. But I would love to see him back if he fits. My concern, well, I'll tell you this.
Is this a hold then?
It's a hold because it's all conditional on how you're going to put the roster together. If you end up with D. Will and then you take Kidd backing up D. Will, then I don't think you're going to have room for him because I think you're going to want to go for a little more size. But maybe not. Maybe they feel that defensively he outplays his height. And to some degree, he does.
He kind of does.
A little bit. I love the guy. I love his attitude. I love his personality. I think he's got a much greater skill set than what he's been given credit for over the years. He was kind of lost playing with LeBron. And not lost like he didn't know what to do on the court, but lost in the shuffle. I don't think people appreciate it. I've really become more of a Delonte appreciator just by watching how versatile he is. I mean, he does a lot of things pretty good. He's not a standout, really, at any particular one thing, but he's pretty good at a lot of different stuff.
For those who still don't follow, didn't you have a good point on Delonte via Twitter?
About his mid-range game?
Yeah.
About 2 weeks ago or two? Well, no, not that long. Maybe about a week ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody ever talked about this guy's mid-range game. Ever. We brought him in going, okay, he's tough. He's an okay point guard. He's a defensive bulldog. He's not going to be able to keep up with water bugs, but he's strong and he's quick and he's tenacious. And he can get to the hole a little bit. Okay, cool. I was fine with all that. But to find out, and you knew you could kind of shoot the three a little bit because every guard can shoot the three a little bit just
or
about in this
they
league.
Know, they think they can.
Yeah, so whatever. But he's got this, when he's healthy and everything's right, he's got this good step-back game, mid-range, whether it's spotting up or stepping back, from about 15 to 20 feet, he's really good, and he knows how to use a screen. That's something that has not been talked about a whole lot, but you watch him using screens set by Dirk. I mean, Dirk is like such a weapon for another guy because he attracts so much attention. He really knows how to use screens. He's crafty. He's an intelligent basketball player. So, total surprise for me there. The other things kind of came as build. So, because of that, really, if I'm the Mavericks, I tell him, man, we love you. We love what you did. This was a weird year. This year was a mess, and you were a stud the whole time with your attitude and the way you brought it every game and fighting through injury. And being a tough guy and being, big for your teammates and everything else. And our guard situation is completely up in the air. But we want you back if it's a fit for both parties. Because it may be that someone pays him more than what the Mavericks can afford to pay him for what he can do.
I agree.
For them. Not for, can do for another team.
Another team.
But can do for them, especially if they go with the Deron Williams and Kidd. Because then, like I said, I want somebody a little more versatile.
Let me ask you this:
in terms of size,
this might totally rock the idea of your long term plan or what you thought you were going to do. But let's say you get D. Will, and you have the option of Kidd at 5 or D. West at 3. Would they bite the bullet and take Kidd at six or whatever I just said instead of taking West at three?
That's if you get D. Will?
Yeah.
No. I think you got to go with West.
Would they actually do that, though, based off of what everything seems to be playing out as? That's a tough move maybe to actually do, to follow through on.
Maybe it is. And maybe you make maybe you piss off his agent a little bit, but his agent owes you the biggest solid in the history of solids.
Yeah, what happened was...
Yeah, what about Lamar? I'm surprised he hasn't dropped Lamar, actually, and maybe there's something that will happen down the road, but if I was an agent after what happened...
What happened?
You put your butt on the line for every player. It's your, you know, it's kind of your rep when you say somebody's coming here and he's ready to play, whatever. So, anyway, water under the bridge. I think I would go with West.
Okay.
Just because West at $3 million to me for what he's done when he's been healthy is a bargain.
Yeah,
Kidd, when he's healthy at $3 million is fair value. And this is all about guys outplaying their contracts. The new salary cap era is all about guys outplaying their contracts. The teams that win, it'll be kind of like baseball. Baseball for teams other than the Yankees and the Red Sox is that you got to have guys who are still cheap and outplaying their deal. It's a different construct. It's a lot harder to come by in basketball to find a guy who's outplaying his contract. But the teams that can figure out how to get those guys are going to have a significant advantage.
I agree. And then one of the points that you brought up with West was the pick and roll or just playing off the screens. You saw that a lot early in the Laker game where he was just thriving off of Dirk's screens.
Yep.
And it reminded me a lot of what JJ did. In a different form, JJ would get to the rim, but West would be able to spot up and hit jumpers. But the Lakers made their adjustment by buying him out more on the screens. But I'll agree with you again in terms of West. You've got to hold to see what happens in terms of the shaking out of the roster. But he's been nothing but positive for this team this year, especially based off of what he's made where I know Ben Rogers has coined the term that this year is a ghost ship for the Mavericks, but he's been amazing for this team.
That's the thing, is that in a year where everybody else has been mentally tenuous at best in terms of their focus, he's been bulldog. It's clear that he's just wired that way. And he also probably knows that he came in on a one-year deal, minimum deal, and he's trying to make sure he has a career. The rest of these guys don't have that problem.
Right.
You know, Vince Carter kind of came in a similar deal, but I think he's proven that the money he got's about what he's worth now at this stage in his career, and he'll go wherever his skills are needed next year for probably the same amount of money on a couple-year deal for whether it's here or elsewhere, just wherever he has the best chance to fit and best chance to, you know, latch onto a contender. I don't think he's played himself into more money. Delonte definitely has played himself into more money. That's why you have to hold.
Right. And it's funny you brought him up. The next item, if you will, is Vince Carter. And the statement is Vince Carter has recovered from the wall he went through earlier this season.
Based on what evidence?
Based off of what we've seen lately.
Oh, this is the I'm supposed to buy, sell,
yes.
or hold that? I'm selling that.
Okay, because let's see where this was. Last six games, 29.3 minutes per game, which seems like a lot.
Does seem heavy for him.
10.7 points per game, 5.0 rebounds, 2.8 assists, 1.2 blocks, just under one steal in the last six games. So that's a pretty dramatic
shooting percentage there.
I don't have that. Of course I don't. I would have to look that up. You start talking to me, and I'll look that up.
Eyeball test. It's been better, and I agree. And I think we talked about that a little bit on last week's show, how we felt like he had just put a couple of pretty good games together.
Shooting 40% over his last five, 41% from three.
Yeah, see, that's just not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
That bothers me, you know. But on a team that's struggling for offense, maybe if the team wasn't in such a offensive crap hole half the time, he would be getting better shots or whatever. He's kind of forced to put up a lot of shots. If it's not Jet or Dirk, it's going to be him to some degree. So I don't think – I haven't seen a significant change. I've seen an establishment of a new normal, and he's capable of doing some things. But I don't think that the team is playing in a fluid enough style offense to mask his shortcomings right now. I felt like earlier in the year, obviously, he had a little more pep in his step, but I haven't seen a significant drop-off in the way he carries himself. I've seen a significant drop-off in his statistical performance. And those are two different things. I don't feel like he's running the floor any more or less briskly than he was in January. If anything, he definitely, the first maybe 2 weeks of the year, looked like he was in, you know, cement shoes. And I feel like after that, things picked up, and he had that stretch where he was really effective early in games. But the Mavs were playing much better offensive basketball then than they are now.
Right.
And really, since he's dropped off, the entire team offensively has dropped off. So is it chicken or egg? I'm going to go ahead and say it's egg. I'm not sure what that means.
What does that mean?
But it means that I think that it's as much – he is at the point in his career now where he's playing off of other people, and that's his style. And the coaching staff has reinforced that he knows how to play well off of other people. But if other people aren't playing well, if the ball movement sucks, if the spacing's off, if execution on other guys are bad, if other guys have dead legs, you know, if Dirk's going having shooting problems here and there, or, you know, if you're missing Delonte West and you're playing Jason Kidd more minutes, or you're missing a Jason Kidd and you're playing a Roddy B more minutes, or yada, 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 all those things I think affect his ability to do the things that they said he was so good at, learning how to play off other guys and get good shots, which at his age is where he's at.
He has to be, yeah.
Because of that, I don't think he's – I think he hit a wall. I do think he kind of hit a wall. I think he got – I should say he came in inside of a wall. He busted out of the wall, hit a new wall.
That's unfortunate.
But that's just who he is now.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. And like I said, I think he has played himself into – proving that he's worth a $3.5 million contract to whoever wants him. I like his attitude. He's another guy, I think, whose intensity has been good this year through all the ups and downs. And if he's a ninth man, eighth man, floor spreader type, then he's got a place on any of the contenders, just depending on, you know, the fit, whether Dallas or otherwise.
I'm going to go ahead and just take a little bit of a buy on it just based off of where he, performance-wise, not attitude-wise, but performance-wise, he sort of fell off, but he's made some good strides now. The thing that really seems to have gone away is that post-up game, but I don't know how much that actually just is schematically or health-wise, so on and so forth, because I imagine it has to take a toll.
Has anybody asked?
I don't think so.
I'd be interested to know what he would say. I mean, he's not going to give a 100% right. straight answer. But is he going to tip his hand towards, we saw it, we liked it, and we're going to do it more later, or it ran its course and we can't do it anymore because other teams have countered it?
Right.
It could have been that it was countered. I just don't see a lot of change in his physical ability, I guess, except just a teensy little bit of lead foot, but not much. Nothing,
but that's natural.
Nothing compared to the lead foot he had the first week and
a half.
And
he was playing from behind. Yeah.
Right, so he's had a little bit of lead foot, kind of like Dirk's had a little bit of lead foot the last month and a half, kind of like, you know, everybody, except he's older and has more miles on the tires.
Quick one before we go, and maybe we can dig on it some more next week. The center rotation is in good standing as the team moves to the playoffs.
I'm saying hold, and I'm holding on that because Jan Mahimi is still too inconsistent. And if he becomes more consistent, then it's a strong buy.
Right.
It's all about his consistency. I mean, I think they've pinpointed the situations where they know how to use Brandon Wright well, and he's producing. Derek Harper calls him production because every time he gets out – I guess you don't see this because you don't see the games. Yeah. Derek Harper calls him production because every time he's on the court, he just produces. He gets stats. So –
is he trying to make that the nickname?
Yes.
He's production.
He's calling him production.
Hmm.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's a good nickname, but it's Harp.
Interesting.
I have great respect for Derek Harper's
for sure.
basketball abilities from my childhood, so
sure.
that is what that is. But yeah, so anyway, they have found where Wright fits. He does what he do, and he does it well most of the time. He plays within himself. Brendan Haywood also does what he do. He's a known quantity. He's a very solid center. He's done yeoman work against Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge, and you know he rebounds when he needs to rebound most of the time, except when the entire team's not rebounding worth a crap. The wild card has always been and will continue to be Yan Mahimi. When he's consistent, Mavs center rotation's incredible. When
it's a three-headed monster.
When he's active and he's rebounding, but if he's getting muscled around, there's not much he can do to stop that. On the other hand, when he's just not playing at the level he should, when he's you know, missing easy putbacks or out of position on defense, things of that nature, then it definitely hurts what the Mavs are able to do. Or getting in foul trouble. You know, that's another
thing. That's the big one, yeah.
Especially, I feel like lately, every time I look up, he's got four fouls. So
I'm gonna conditionally buy just based off the fact that they don't need all three necessarily unless they're seeing the teams that we said are a problem with the Lakers or maybe Memphis. But I think they found a nice problem.
Yeah, I'm not going to indict anybody's center rotation because they can't match up with Bynum or Marc Gasol.
Right.
Or Bynum and Paul Powell together.
Powell Gasol.
Yeah, Powell Gasol.
So I'm going to say conditionally yes because they have problems with Jan's consistency, but they found a good counter solution with Wright. So.
Yeah, again, as long as, like you said, as long as they don't get stuck in a funky position where he's just going to get killed.
Which happened big time on Sunday.
Boy, it did.
That zone did not work anymore.
You can't expect it to. I mean, the Lakers are so skilled and big. It's one thing to be big and kind of skilled. It's another thing to be skilled and not too big. Right. They got both in spades, and that's why nobody wants to play them. No, I don't want to play them.
Nobody wants to. I think they've got to be the favorite going into this playoff for the West.
Yeah, it's really sexy to pick OKC, but they have some skins on the wall. If Kobe's right, if he rests that chronic leg thing he's got, and if he's in Kobe killer mode, I mean, I think Powell, I hate to say it, I hate to give the guy any credit at all, but I think he's
a beast.
He is mad as hell about that delicate flower performance that he put in last year. And he's like on a man on a mission about it. He just looks like,
and he's
looks
pissed.
Like a different guy. He looks different than he did the 2 years they won.
And
to
he's
me.
Pissed that he's been almost traded about six different
yes,
times.
I think it's all that put together. I think he's fired the F up. I think, and I don't like that because he's good. You know, I mean he's one of the better power forwards in the Dirk Duncan era. He's right there. He doesn't get into that Dirk Duncan Garnett discussion a lot. But
he's right. He's got to be near the top after that.
If he keeps doing what he's doing now through the playoffs and they get yet another ring. And
he'll be a three-time champion?
He's the guy who brought Kobe three more rings, basically.
Wow.
Although now Bynum is a huge factor, and he wasn't in the previous two. But you got to start saying, how does this guy? So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
All right, so that was our latest edition of Buy, Sell, or Hold. We're going to take a break. We're going to jump into some NBA nuggets, and it's going to be a scattershot of NBA news and information in our own little unique kind of way. Mavericks Outsider Report.
Yo! The party's across the street featuring the greatest band in the world! Fourth day to time!
That's right, y'all know what time it is.
What time is it?
It's time for some NBA Nuggets, Brian. That's what time it is.
I'm excited. See, the bass has to be up at the chin.
It's easily chin level.
It has to be. Oh.
What was that?
Your producer.
Oh, she does all kinds of crazy noises, man.
Yeah. Feel it.
Just let it sink in. Sorry, I was messing with my level there. Yeah, NBA Nuggets, Mavericks Outsider Report. Weekly look into what's going on in the NBA. We like to take a look around and see what's making news, why it's making news, who is making news, when they're making news, and whenceforth they will be making news later. And look at it through our Mav-colored glasses. We don't have the
I'll
apparatus.
I'll use this.
Okay, we got this. First nugget. Andrew Bynum, beasting and feasting.
Man, he just went nuts. Did you see this stat line for him? What day was this?
Refresh my memory. What, three days ago?
It was last week against the Spurs.
Yeah.
He had 30 rebounds. 30 rebounds.
Shut up.
30 rebounds against the San Antonio Spurs. He just became
Pawn. Go home.
The ninth player in the last 27 seasons to have a 30-rebound game. Joins Love, Barkley, Michael Cage, Mutombo, Oakley, Cykley. Ronnie Cykley was on this list. Kevin Willis was on it twice. Rodman was on it.
Some big names there, boy.
And he's the fifth player in franchise history to turn the trick, joining Mikan, Chamberlain, Baylor, and Jabbar.
I was thinking about this the other day after the Mavericks-Lakers game. The idea that he may continue to grow and become a fully formed center beast is not a thought that I'm comfortable with as a Mavericks fan.
No one's comfortable
really
with that.
It really pisses me off. Okay, the Lakers are all awesome and stuff. They three-peat. Kobe and Shaq have a girl fight. Shaq leaves. Kobe tries to score 800 points a game. They have one bad year. One bad year, and they fall into Andrew freaking Bynum's lap. 1 year. They fart and fall down and find another dominant big man.
Something, and he's healthy
this
year.
Just like the freaking Rockets. Fart and fall down and get Olajuwon. Fart and fall down and get Yao Ming. Spurs, fart and fall down and get David Robinson. Fart and fall down and get Tim Duncan. Why is it that the same four teams do this? This is a problem.
It is a problem.
It's a problem for the rest of the league. What are these franchises doing? Well, for some it's obvious. Okay, Hakeem Olajuwon, for Houston it's totally obvious. I think it's dumbass luck.
Yeah.
And for San Antonio too, I guess it's dumbass luck.
The 1 year that they win, they get the franchise power forward, arguably the best power forward.
Yeah, and then David Robinson, everybody knew.
Yeah.
They took a little risk with him because he wasn't coming straight out with the Navy thing, but he was still, everybody knew.
Right.
He was a known quantity. You got to give the Lakers credit for this Bynum thing, man.
And the crazy thing, there's two crazy things about it.
What was he, the eighth pick, ninth pick?
I think so.
There's been a hell of a lot of eighth picks that have been horrible
yeah.
in the last decade, and he is not one of them.
In this game, he had 30 rebounds. The Spurs had 33.
Sounds
That's
like
nuts.
Al Jefferson damn near did that to the Mavs
Pretty
last
much.
Night.
And then the other crazy thing where we need to sound down a little bit is the post game where I'm trying to get his name. Where did it go? No, not that. Mike Trudell, who is the Lakers writer for their website, interviewed Bynum after the game, and it's interesting how it kind of went. So this is what went down.
Andrew Bynum, these are the names that have grabbed 30 rebounds in Lakers history. George Mikan, Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Elgin Baylor. You just joined them. How did you do it? How do you feel?
Well, I shot the ball like shit, man. It's bothering me.
So it's still actually rolling after that. And
knucklehead.
You'll catch this.
Andrew, what was the focus?
So he's the broadcast is like, whoops. So we got to block out the rest of this.
We live right now.
Yeah, Delonte. So again, let's tee this up again knowing what we know.
Andrew Bynum, these are the names that have grabbed 30 rebounds in Lakers history. George Mikan, Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Elgin Baylor. You just joined them. How did you do it? How do you feel?
Well, I shot the ball like shit, man. It's bothering me.
He shot the ball like shit, and that basically led to him getting what he did.
I like that. There's several things he's done recently, like the three-pointer and all that, that puts him in the knucklehead category, not to mention the clothesline of J.J. Barea and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I like that. Hey, I'm mad. I'm not shooting the ball any good. I'm going to just go grab every board I can. But I hate it because I'm going to have to deal with this guy for like the next 6 or 7 years. He does have those health issues. You never know when something might happen and his, you know, kneecap might just turn to dust or something. But at least I'm telling you, he has taken a step this year, dude.
Massive step.
He has taken a step, and I do not like it.
Agreed.
At all.
At all.
Next nugget. What do you do if you're the New Orleans Hornets and you have Eric Gordon as a free agent?
So Eric Gordon,
who was hurt for a good portion of the year.
He was pretty much hurt all of this year and has just come back in the last handful of games, but he's still being monitored based off of the issues he's had. And he's the big...
Some trash swag for you there.
He's the big fish out of the Chris Paul trade. So he's been hurt pretty much all year, and he's a restricted free agent.
Big fish in the Chris Paul trade, but just because he was the biggest fish that New Orleans had. He's certainly not a fish in Paul's caliber.
But he is a very good player.
He's not swimming in the same aquarium as Chris Paul.
That's a good analogy right there. He's still relatively, I think this is still rookie deal-ish, because he made 3.8 this year, and the qualifying offer is 5.1. Our team's
was he a top five pick?
I don't know.
If he's a top five pick, then that's rookie money. If not, he's gotten another.
Seventh. Seventh and 08.
That sounds too high. Inflation, man.
That's how
inflation,
it goes.
Man.
A bitch.
No.
Inflation's a bitch.
It is. So he could theoretically get good money based off of what he did leading up to this year. So what does New Orleans do?
Look, if I'm New Orleans, I've let him go because I got to tear down and suck. I got to suck for luck because he's a nice player. Don't get me wrong, but you're not. How tall is he? You haven't pulled up. Is he like 6'4"?
He is 6'3", 215.
I'm sorry. I'm not building around a combo guard.
He
not
is
doing
a
it.
Pure
not
combo guard.
Doing it. Not doing it. So he's a nice player. Maybe if there's something I can do in terms of a sign and trade just to get something back for him, I will. But if I have to let him go and tear it down to rebuild, look, the NBA is going to let that franchise fester in New Orleans for a million years.
Just got a new owner.
Because of Katrina, exactly. So there's no pressure. You got all the time in the world to fix it. When it gets good, the fans will come. And if you're willing to go into this thing now, at this point, then don't worry about putting butts in the seats next year. You know, sell them on a rebuilding plan and get your scouts going.
Career-wise, he's averaged 18.2 points, 45% shooting, 37 from three. He's a guy that can get to the rim and finish, but that athleticism's taken a hit this year. So I think it's an interesting scenario for them, or scenario. I wouldn't be surprised if they actually keep him, because PR-wise, you can't say our guy that we got for Chris Paul, see ya.
But you can, because because everybody knows your new ownership, and it's not a good – I don't think it's a good basketball move. Now, how about this? Even if you have him next year, you're still going to suck.
You still suck.
So if you can get him for fair market value, say, I don't know.
It's going to be hard to determine the market value now.
That's what I'm saying, like $8 or $9 million a year.
Which is a healthy raise.
Right, but if you can get him for that, then hang on to him. But if somebody wants to go give him more money than that, then that's dumb money, so let it go. You have to be – this is – you have a clean opportunity to have a clean slate. You know you suck. You know you're going to suck for the immediate future. So, you know, take the Oklahoma City model and try to build through smart drafting and, you know, good scouting and some minor player acquisitions.
Next year they have $39 million on the books. So they're shedding a lot of salary. So interesting to see how it plays out for Eric Gordon and the New Orleans Hornets.
Next nugget.
What did I say?
So I guess Dwight Howard's back got all jacked up by that big punch from Brendan Haywood, huh?
Apparently, the Magic have said they're preparing to finish the regular season without Howard. He missed his fourth straight game earlier this week on Sunday with the back injury, and it's been diagnosed as a herniated disc, which sounds like a problem.
That sucks.
That sounds like a problem.
That right there.
You have a hernia. You've had a herniated disc?
No.
Oh, okay.
For his long-term prospects as an oversized human. That sucks. Those things, I mean, I guess they go away, or they can go away, but who's to say it's not going to come back? Do they have any indication of what caused it?
No, but I know Stan Van Gundy has one suggestion, but they don't really know.
Ate too much pizza.
I somehow don't think that's the problem that they had.
You don't think that he just ate too much pizza and like got some crust lodged in there? Yeah. The thing that worries me is that herniated discs, unless you've been in a traumatic physical altercation with a vehicle, I don't see it as a injury that comes around due to an immediate trauma to your back. I see it as a long-term stress-induced or activity-induced thing, and then that means it has the potential to be chronic, and that's why I say that sucks.
Dr. Dre chronic?
Yes.
Okay.
$20 sack pyramid. Yeah, that's why I don't like that at all, man. And
red flag.
That's a red flag. His whole, you know, Young and the Restless imitation this season has been another red flag.
Maybe that's the stress that hurt his herniated his disc.
Mental stress. Completely different sort of red flag, but also a red flag. And poor old Otis Smith can't catch a break. He gets the guy to stay one more year, and now he's got a herniated damn disc.
Yeah.
That sucks, man.
And then they're...
For him.
And they're okay in the sense playoff-wise because New York and Philly are 4.5 back of them, and there's only 4 games left. So they'll fall a little bit, but that's a problem.
If he's got a herniated disc, how good is it going to be in a week and a half when the season's over?
Right. That's a problem.
Trouble, man. That's just trouble.
T-Rubble.
Next nugget. That was very abbreviated.
Yeah.
Does Boston, the Celtics, have one more run left in them?
They have surprised the hell out of me.
They have, haven't they?
They have.
Me too.
Because, what was it? Probably 3 weeks into the season, they looked dog terrible.
Yeah. Worse than Dallas. They looked older than Dallas.
They look worse than Dallas looks now.
Yeah, they look, definitely. Yes. They just looked like they were ready to hang it up, man.
And they were hovering around the seventh seed, and I said, my bold prediction was that they were not going to make the playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs.
I did, Jim. So now they've climbed up to the fourth seed, and it's a three-way tie between Boston, Atlanta, and Orlando for the fourth seed, but they have the tiebreakers. And based off of who's in that three-team bunch, Boston should be the fourth seed.
Well, don't get too excited. It's not like Atlanta and Orlando have exactly been world beaters this year.
Right.
But that being said, you have to give Boston credit because they've upped their level of play. They've looked better. They've looked more active. They've played hard. They've sustained some good stretches of basketball against tough teams. All things that I wish I'd seen more of from our little Mavericks. So, do they have another run? Maybe. I'm gonna say that they maybe do.
Look at this. I looked at this.
Because I'm still not sold on Chicago right now with Derrick Rose being... You know,
I would take them over Miami. I would
back off injury.
I would take Chicago over Miami. I would.
I don't know, man.
I would.
I don't know, man.
Looking at Boston, they've given up this season. They average 89.2 points allowed. That's third best in the league. So
where are they on points per 100 possessions?
Points
though?
Per 100? I have to scroll down to look at that. Points per 100 possessions, they are at 98.1.
How does that rank?
First in the league.
Boom. There you go. That tells you all you need to know.
And then the
I think they can make a run. You know what? I'm going to root for those guys in the East.
You're going to root for KG?
Oh, that damn it. No, I'm not. I'm not rooting for those guys.
Oh. And the crazy thing about it is they're there defensively. But they only score 91.7 points per game, which is fifth worst in the league.
And that's a pretty tight average margin of victory. John Hollinger's got to hate that.
He's got to hate that. And their offensive rating per 100 possessions.
Isn't that the guy that either does or did a Mavericks blog?
Not exactly.
That's not him.
No. Points per 100 possessions, they score 100.8. So they barely squeak out.
Yeah, boy, that's eking. That's eking. That's tough.
So that's what makes it so weird of how they've been able to do this.
Smart play, I guess. Good coaching. I mean, I think everybody kind of feels like Doc's a pretty good coach. Yep. And they've got vets that are smart. I don't know, man.
So you say they might have a run in them. What does that mean?
That means that maybe they can
semis?
Maybe they can make some serious
noise.
They get
a first round win.
I'm seeing them making serious noise in the semis type of being a
push,
run.
Push
Chicago or Miami, and I don't know if that means that they will do that, but I wouldn't be totally shocked because if they've been able to do this, then it leads you to believe that they can possibly replicate it. Next nugget. Should NBA players be paid to play in the Olympics? Go to the source of this. You have the source of where this all started?
From Dwayne Wade?
Yeah.
Yeah. He said, quote, "It's a lot of things you do for the Olympics, a lot of jerseys you sell. We play the whole summer. I do think guys should be compensated, just like I think college players should be compensated as well. Unfortunately, it's not there, but I think it should be something, you know, that it should be something, you know, there for it." He went on to say, "The biggest thing now is you get no rest, so you go to the end of the season Team USA training camp is 2 weeks later. You're giving up a lot to do it. It's something you want to do, but it's taxing on your body. You're not playing for the dollar, but it would be nice to be if you would be compensated.
He did. Who do you think you are? Just shut up.
He did go on to have a statement the next day saying that I do not want to be played to go to the Olympics. And he went on to say, he tweeted,
my agent told me to tell y'all.
He tweeted, playing for his country motivates him more than any dollar amount.
My publicist said this, told me to say this, and my agent told me to say that, and my mom told me I sounded rude, and blah, blah, blah. Shut up. Hey, man, if you don't want to be all tired and everything, you don't have to play.
It's true.
That's all. The Olympics are all about amateur sports. You can, we can have a separate debate about the validity of that and whether or not it matters, because in a lot of ways, it's just a big multinational circle jerk, and nobody makes any money, and it's all just a bunch of, you know, political brouhaha, and it's all on the back of, oh, look, we love amateur athletes. But on the other hand, it's pretty damn cool to go out there and bust out the 400-meter dash in the Olympics and get the gold medal. I'm all for it. I love watching track and field in the Olympics.
I agree.
So there's a whole, like, there's a whole host of things you can talk about with the Olympics. But a pro player who makes $20 million a year plus endorsements whining because he puts out extra energy and sells jerseys and he's tired and yada, 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 when the whole idea of the deal is you're going into it as a unpaid athlete, what's the point of even having the conversation?
Right.
It's not like this is the only venue for you to play basketball at the highest level. If you're one of the world's best basketball players and this is the basketball at the highest level, which it's not, then maybe bitch a little bit. Get people on your side. Maybe things will change. I'm really good at basketball. I sure wish I could get $20 million for it, but these damn Olympics won't pay me. You know, like a downhill skier.
Okay.
What's the biggest venue for downhill skiing?
The Olympics.
The Olympics. What if everybody loved downhill skiing as much as they love basketball? Then everything would be on the Olympics, and there'd be all this money and all this commerce surrounding it for these athletes that don't get paid. So then they would say, screw you guys, we're going to go form a league and get some of this money. So he needs to understand that the reality that he lives in now as an NBA player is one that he's already getting the benefit of playing. For most people in their sport, they're already playing in the highest venue when they're at the Olympics.
Yeah.
The guy doing the little thing where you run 3 miles and then shoot a gun, which I don't understand why that's together.
I think that's just called skeet shooting.
No, there's seriously like a triathlon or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's a rifle too, so it wouldn't be skeet. I think they do like targets, but
I call it skeet shooting.
Anyway, those guys, they train and train and work and work, and their income is their an instructor on the side, or they're like Nastia Lukin's mom and do gymnastics for little kids or whatever, and then in Plano, and then they every 4 years they spend every dime they have to go try to make the Olympics. So he's already got what he's asking for.
Right.
So just shut up. Just an example of a guy who doesn't know what he's talking about because he's an idiot, and there you go.
Okay, here's a guy. He looks like an idiot, and he was.
Do you want to go to a live look-in?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
Sure.
We've got options. One of them is already off the table because it's at halftime, and it's a terrible game. Detroit Pistons and Cleveland Cavaliers is off the board. We will not be live looking at that game because it's 61-38 in favor of Detroit. Our options are Philly and Indiana, grinded out Eastern Conference game. Our other option is Memphis and Minnesota.
Minnesota.
I'm guessing with our live looking capabilities, we cannot look in the other game.
No.
Okay. That's what I thought.
We don't have the ability to go to Boston and New York or San Antonio and LA because
that's not playing yet.
Right. But those two are
oh, they're TNT.
Yeah. They're TNT. So they're not available.
So it's your pick, buddy. You want Indiana, Philly, or you want Memphis, Minnesota? Which one seems more appealing to you? Both of them seem appealing to me.
I got to go Western Conference,
okay,
man.
Let's go. Let's go to where is this game? That's always a great question going into your live looking. Where is this game? It looks like it is in Minnesota. It is. And there's Mr. Pekovic, who looks like, oh, what's it? I forgot his name. But the character in Superman 1 and 2.
Like Nod or something?
Non.
It's like some kind of, yeah. Some kind of like one syllable sounds like the dude's like a caveman or something.
He's not Zod, though. That's all that really matters.
Zod. That's what I was thinking. Who's Zod?
He's the main villain. This guy's just the ogre-looking creeper.
Sorry, I have to go full screen.
No, I understand. So Mike Conley's got the ball. What's the score? Oh, the Mega Millions is at $53 million.
How do you feel about Mike Conley?
I think he's...
When they gave him that contract, I was shocked that it was way too big.
Yeah, but he seems to be okay as a player.
Yeah.
He's a nice middle-tier point guard.
Right.
That's
not,
my opinion.
Not a four-year, $40 million.
Oh, no. Someone's shooting themselves in the foot. I'm guessing it's Michael Beasley. Actually, I shorted him from field by a couple of points because they made a couple of threes. So was that Wayne Ellington? Yeah.
That was Wayne Ellington with a jumper from the right baseline there.
It's unfortunate that JJ's not in this game right now.
No, we don't have JJ. We have Nikolai Pekovic, and we have Anthony Tolliver. I always get Anthony Tolliver and Anthony Randolph mixed up. Do they both wear number 44?
Probably. Tolliver wears 44, that's for sure.
Memphis staying ahead of Minnesota 44-37 here with 7:05 left in the second quarter.
That was Martell Webster, isn't that the
cousin of the great Jason Terry? You know, it's really a shame to me that Minnesota doesn't have anything left to play for.
It all went to crap with Rubio.
You know, I was really hoping that this time of year that we'd be watching them instead of Phoenix or Houston try to fight there at the bottom.
I did say last week, though, that I thought Phoenix was a team that would jump up, and it looks like they might be that team.
They're peaking at the right. Pekovic just got blocked by Marc Gasol in probably one of the most pathetic efforts I've ever seen in my life, but he's going to go at it again from the right
block. Give him a little elbow.
Nice little push off there, a little clear out with the left elbow, a little righty jump hook from the right block.
I must break you.
Marc Gasol reminds me of not one but two dudes that I knew growing up. One of the two dudes that I knew growing up actually called in a bomb threat to school, and we all got out for the day. No lie, man. That's life in Hamilton, Texas for you. Anthony Tolliver's got beef with a ref. We get another look here at the Pekovic jump hook. Marc Gasol's like, what? What was that?
I must break you.
That's what Pekovic just said.
His hair's too dark.
Yeah, that's true.
But he has kind of a Drago vibe about him.
He has a little bit. He seems to just beast on. He came out of nowhere this year.
Okay, so the other night I was watching Memphis and Utah because I was kind of rooting for Utah to make some trouble for Memphis just a little bit. And Memphis all of a sudden started drilling threes at the end of the game. And I know we've talked,
Memphis?
Yeah, and okay. I know we've talked about them. They don't shoot a lot of threes. They shoot some of the fewest threes of anybody in the league. But they have a lot of guys who fancy themselves as big shooters.
Gilbert Arenas.
And Arenas is one. You know, Rudy Gay, Rudy Gay's awesome.
But OJ.
You know, OJ Mayo has that reputation of being a guy who will shoot you out of a game. But he just iced the game on a three, Mayo did. And so do you think they're going to try, you know, they've tried to trade Mayo like 100 times. Do you think they're going to try and trade him again?
I you just got to go with what you know. And I figure they probably will just because they've tried so many times. They'll find a market for him.
Lionel Hollins looks pissed. Mike Conley hits a jumper from the left elbow, 46-39, with 5.5 left in the second.
Mike Conley is 2-for-2 from three in this game. Interesting stuff right there. They've only shot four of them, and he's had two of them. Oh, and Oliver something or another.
We got local commercials. They are what they
Didn't William Shatner get in trouble recently? Are you sick?
I have no idea. Oh,
okay. Maybe I'm just making that
up. Sorry, dude. I have no idea.
Maybe I'm just totally making that up. But,
I'm out.
Oh. You're not into Priceline.com?
Never used it.
I've never used it either.
It sounds like too much trouble.
Probably.
I just like to go in knowing what. I've looked at it before. You have to, like, bid. Shut up.
Sorry, Bob. You told Bob Lanier to shut up.
No, no, no. I told Avery Johnson.
No, you told Bob Lanier.
I told Avery Johnson.
Bob Lanier to shut up.
Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson. Anyway. Priceline, my understanding is that you go in and you like bid.
Mm-hmm.
You just say, I want to pay airfare from Dallas to Chicago, I want to pay $279, and either you get it or you don't. I don't need that kind of stress, man. Travel is stressful enough. Just tell me what it costs, tell me when it's gonna be. I want to know when my flight's leaving, when my flight's getting there. I don't want to have to change planes, I don't want to have to wait, I don't want to have to stop. And if all of that makes it too expensive, I don't need to go.
Right.
I do not fly unless it's nonstop. And if I can't afford to fly, well, unless you have no choice, but I don't go places far enough away where you have no choice. If I can't afford the extra $200 to make it
nonstop,
then I don't need to be going that bad, and I just would rather abstain.
Do you think this is the conversation Skin, Follow, and Harp have during breaks.
Yes, absolutely. So
price line, bro.
Back at FedEx Forum here in Memphis.
Look at you.
We want to promote the Great Grizzlies giveaway Saturday, 7 p.m. Central. Portland is going to be here in town meeting the Memphis Grizzlies. The first 5,000 fans will receive Grizzlies trading cards.
And you know trading cards are hot right now.
Yeah, they're huge.
They're so hot.
So much bigger than they were in like 1989 or 90.
Do they do those electronically now?
I bet there's somebody trying to do that. But that takes away their – they can be duplicated infinitely, so that takes away scarcity. So there's no
– But really, are they valuable
anymore?
They're
never going to be worth anything. So we got a guy in the front row holding up a giant Best Buy sign. I don't understand that.
I don't understand it either, but at least JJ's in the game now being guarded by Conley.
Old JJ.
He's come around lately. I've heard that through the web. And that's Tolliver. He seemed to be hitting those against the Mavericks earlier this year, but not so much anymore. Beasley, of course, just loses the ball.
All right, as we close out... Give me your thoughts on Michael Beasley. People love to talk about him because he likes to smoke law. So what's your thought on this guy?
I think he's a guy that likes to smoke a lot of law. He's just a guy that seemed to be way too hot in terms of the trade game leading up to the trade deadline.
Yeah, his name was in everything.
Everyone. The Lakers wanted him so bad. He just seems like a guy that's not going to get it. Unless he just gets scared straight.
There's a lot of those that are like that, and I guess he's one of them.
In this game, he's only played 11 minutes and has 2 points.
I just get to a point with guys like that where I get tired of hearing about him. You know, it's kind of just fatigue.
This year, he's got 11.6 points, 4.4 rebounds, which are below his career averages. So another year
he's basically down. On his way to irrelevance pretty much, and I'll be glad when they stop talking about him. Quick break, and
okay.
When we come back, we're going to close things out super fast. Look ahead at the week that is coming up for the Mavericks. Coming
was that Canadian?
I don't know what happened there.
Week up?
I had like a uvula thing. You know that thing in the back? Anyway, we're going to take a quick break and see you on the other side. Baby, you got something that would make a mini brother my pride.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Hard to top Prince making a cover of his own song that he never released and thus became famous on bootleg. And so then he turns around and decides to update it, cover it. That's where we're at. Mavericks Outsider Report, final segment here. Episode 56 from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center. Coming at you hard with NBA basketball.
Last I checked, Tim is still in Hawaii.
And I don't know. My wife left earlier. We talked about her backing out ability. Mm-hmm. I don't know where she went. I don't. Like, there's no. I didn't know there
She's pregnant and she's just out on the town.
I didn't know there was anything on the agenda tonight. So I don't
know. Well, she needed that
sauerkraut.
Yeah, she needed
the
sauerkraut.
That's my problem because.
You can't drive after 30 minutes.
No, that indicates that she made a sandwich, which indicates that wherever she went, she's not coming back with food. So that means. That means I'm having a sandwich.
You're having a sandwich.
Damn.
That's rough.
I don't need that.
World pains.
I'm sorry. I don't know. However old I get, I'm never going to outgrow the excitement of being at home, minding your own business, and somebody comes walking through the door with a paper bag with fast food in it. There's just there's like a rush of endorphins. It's just like that's the greatest thing. I don't care how old I am, how health conscious I become. Or how knowing of the fact that it's not good for me, I become...
It's still good.
I'm always going to get that little twinge of excitement from the smell of the freshly fried fries and the little sacks, and it's like just a treat.
Now you've just disappointed yourself for
now
what's
coming
in your
future.
Now I've
got to go have a turkey sandwich.
Yeah.
Anyway, before I do have a turkey sandwich, we want to talk about the games that are coming up this week. We're
going to preview three of the final four games.
Three of the final four games, and that means that for our next episode, we're going to have a light episode. May even be able to do a playoff preview if we know who are.
We hopefully know what's going to be happening at that point.
So, who we got, brother?
We've got the Houston Rockets, the desperate Houston Rockets on Wednesday night, tomorrow night at the American Airlines Center.
This is really the only one that merits any major previewing, in my opinion, because this has seeding implications. The Rockets have lost their last four games. They got to start winning some games or they're not going to make the playoffs. They've got no tiebreaker advantage against Phoenix. We mentioned that earlier. That's going to be a major problem for them. They've had a solid season. They've been in contention all year. Things are all of a sudden crap in the bed, and they got to right the ship, and it's going to come against Dallas, who've just played 864 minutes of NBA basketball in the last 7 hours.
I don't believe that's factually correct.
And here we are, and it's just – this is ripe for a letdown, dude. I'm not feeling good about this game.
That's why I said the concern for these minutes is only short term. It's not.
This is the game where
you're concerned, and you have no idea how this team is going to react. You know how Houston's going to react, but you don't know how Dallas is going to react. Is it going to be the game where a team plays like they're on the second night of a back-to-back and they try to just bum rush you early because they know they don't have the gas left later, or are they magically going to have energy? What's going to happen? We have no idea.
No, you don't know. All you know is I think Houston's going to be fighting.
They're going to have to.
What's Kyle Lowry's status right now?
He's good.
Is he back?
I believe he's good to go.
Okay. I mean, you know, Mavericks didn't have to deal with that earlier. What about Kevin Martin?
I believe he is back now, too.
So are they at full strength?
Yeah.
See, the Mavericks haven't even had them at full strength yet.
This is true.
And they've pretty much handled up on them. They had that one game that went into OT. But, you know, they pretty much handled it up on their business like they needed to. So that's a nice positive. But at this point, the Mavericks are in that big swath of mediocrity that I talked about earlier. And as a result, you don't know what you're going to get until you get in the middle of the game and see what's happening. And my concern is that Dallas doesn't need this game for any real reason. And they've just played these two mammoth games on the road in tough places to play. So it just seems like an energy letdown for me.
Okay, I was incorrect about Kevin Martin. He is still having some problems. It's possible he could play tomorrow. It's possible.
Possible, I'm going to say probably not likely.
But I already forgot his name.
Mike Lowry.
Lowry's back. He's been playing about 20
from
minutes.
From now on, that's how you drive. You remember that? That thing they used to play.
Is it in Bad Boys 1?
I can't remember.
I think
it was in the first one.
Yeah. That's how you drive. He's been playing about 20 minutes. Kind of a nice luxury now that you've gotten Dragic playing the way he's playing, so you don't have to rush Lowry back. But Lowry is a beast earlier this year.
Yep.
So we're going to have to see how Dallas responds. We won't know until the very end of the game, really, because it could easily change. But Houston is clearly going to be a desperate team. Like we said, we're going to see Lowry again, who we haven't really seen. Russell Brand, of course, in the house. I think Marcus Camby got hurt, actually, which is not going to surprise any of
us. No, I heard that today. Yeah. I heard that Camby was hurt, and also they had some other cat that was, like, iffy.
I'm going to
another big man. I don't remember now.
Not Budinger?
No.
Camby has a sore back, and he's questionable for this game Wednesday against the Mavericks. Oh, no. It's not Sam Dam. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, it was Dallenberg.
No, it was Dallenberg?
Yeah.
Really? Man, they're depleted then in their front line. If this – no, he played. Dallenberg suffered back spasms Tuesday during practice. Man, that stinks. He's a game-time decision.
Sucks to be you.
Man, so they're not as healthy as we thought they were.
Nope. They can't stay healthy, and maybe that's part of their downfall at the end of the day, but they've gone all year with injury problems, so who knows. So, yeah, again, that game, energy, 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 that's what it's all going to be about. I expect Houston to outpace Dallas in the energy department. It's just a question of whether or not they will do the same in the execution department. Following the Houston game, Mavericks will see their final back-to-back of the season. They're going to go to Chicago and then go to – no, Chicago, right?
No, they go to Golden State. They stay here for Golden State, and then they go to Chicago, me.
Chicago,
me. And Landry Locker, who we know – you have not talked to, though.
Nope.
No. He calls them Google State because you don't know who they are unless you look at Google to figure out who they are. They're a wild card team, obviously. You never know what you're going to get out of Golden State. We know what we saw of them last week. A little bit of a fight, but then, I think they're actually having a tank severely bad now because I think their pick is lottery protected. I think it's maybe top 7, I want to say. Could be wrong on that completely, but I know they're tanking to protect their pick.
Well, somebody tweeted that they signed Mikey Moore. And if they signed Mikey Moore, isn't that an immediate an immediate indication that you're tanking. It might have been Skin, actually. I can't remember who, but, I mean, come on, man. Mikey Moore, really. Yeah. I mean,
wasn't he a
Mikey
name?
Moore was a spare 10 years ago.
Yeah. So there
was a spare on the Pistons in, like, the Jerry Stackhouse era.
That's a long
time
ago.
Pre-Zeljko Rebrasha.
Wow. That's hard.
Yeah, that's tough.
So, yeah, you don't know what you're going to get.
It's tough.
It is. Golden State's going to be a weird team, but if you're Dallas, if you don't handle your business.
Handle it.
If you don't handle your business Wednesday, you absolutely have to handle your business on Friday.
You have to no matter what, just because you need to do it. You know, last year proved you don't have to be, you know, playing like a world beater into the playoffs to have success. But that Mavs team had seen success throughout the regular season in various fashions and forms. This team has had a tougher go of it, so I want to see something positive. The last thing you want to do is lose to Golden State. Now, the next night in Chicago, if you lose to them, there's no harm in that. And I think the way the standings are shaping up,
Chicago doesn't have to worry about this game as much, I don't think.
I was just about to look at it. I think they're two ahead of Miami in the loss column. So I guess unless they... What do they have between now and
Chicago,
then? How many games?
They have, they have five more games left. One more against Miami. So that game on Thursday against Miami might tell
so
a whole lot.
So how many games between now and when they play Dallas?
Dose.
Who is it against?
Charlotte. That's a W.
And then Miami?
And then Miami.
Okay, so if they beat Charlotte and lose to Miami, they're going to want to play Dallas pretty rough.
They're going to want to, but at that point, you want to see Chicago handle their business Thursday night. If you're a Mavs fan, you want them to beat Miami.
If they go in and lose to Miami, then they're going to be...
All bets are off.
Yeah. It's going to be tough for Dallas because they are a good team.
And then Rose has been having health concerns dramatically over the past week and a half. He's had ankle problems, I think maybe knee problems. He just can't seem to stay healthy at all this year. But the thing with Chicago is they've been able to step up without him, which has been which was their problem last year against Miami. They didn't have anyone to step up when Rose couldn't do anything.
Right. That's the story of their team, and that's why I said ultimately I'm not totally sold on them.
Right. But they've shown me signs this year to make me a little bit more convinced. But again, so the things we're watching are the energy Wednesday, have to win Friday, and what happens on Thursday with Chicago. If Chicago wins both of those games, you would think they're starting to look ahead.
They might kind of lay a little bit down. But then again, maybe not, because they're still – well, if they were to beat Miami, assuming they take care of business against Charlotte.
If they don't, that's massive news right
there. Then if they beat Miami, they're going to be, at worst, three games up in the loss column.
With only three games left.
Yeah, so then they're probably fine. So.
Yeah. So that's what we're looking at for this week.
All right, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
We got news.
This is my book.
Brian's book is in the process of being published.
It is. And the official date of the book, if I look at the calendar, will be Friday, April 27th. That is the official drop date of the book. It'll be available online. And at the very worst, it'll be available online. Ebook might not be ready the 27th, but we're working on it.
Oh, you mean available to buy hard copy?
Buy hard copy,
all right.
Yes.
And I'm sure you will be tweeting the outlets at which it will be available. What day of the week is that?
Friday,
April 27th.
So your appetizer to the playoffs will be this book.
It is called
The 2010-2011 Mavs, My View from the Press Box to the Private Jet. Probably just easier to say 2010-2011 Mavs.
No, you got
to
give the angle.
The angle,
you gotta give the BG angle.
The angle is my
this is
year.
From BG.
What was that?
That's all part of that whole other guy named Brian Gutierrez.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
That guy that just came in and
just ram
pooped all over your name.
Yeah, pretty much my name got destroyed after that. It's my experiences with the Mavericks last year through their championship run and highlighting a bunch of the key games that defined their season. From a statistics standpoint. Statistics standpoint. And then my unique journey of joining the Mavericks just before the playoffs started and everything that entailed after that.
Going from some blogger who was doing a podcast in my house to partying it live after the clincher. I mean, that's a once in a lifetime story.
In a car with Victor Villaba and Mark Follow.
And it's available inside this book, told alongside the story of the team last year. A nice refresher on how glorious those playoffs were. I definitely recommend, if you're a Mavs fan, you put this in your collection. It gives you complete coverage along with some of the other books that have been out there. Great compliment to everything that's already been put out. Plus, it's BG's first book, so you can say you got the guy's first book.
Yeah. And I'm already thinking of ideas for a second book. Not Mavs related, actually.
Impressive.
Too.
Impressive.
Yeah.
So, okay then.
We're going to be back.
We're going to be back.
Sunday.
Sunday, April 22nd.
Is Tim going to be back?
Barely. If he's here, it's going to be funny to see what condition he's in.
He's going
to
be red, drunk,
he's
going to
be
tired,
lobster colored, and still reeking of alcohol.
So we're going to say he's a game time decision.
Yeah, I bet he'll be here, but I'll talk to him on. I think he's getting back late Saturday, so I'll check in.
We're working on guests.
Working on content.
Whatever.
Working on a dream. So
wow,
here we are.
Look at you.
Yeah,
philosophical and
very,
stuff.
Very.
So how can we get this show, Riley?
We can get this show through a variety of ways, Brian. Perhaps the easiest way is through iTunes. If you like
I
to
saw
use
that on
iTunes,
the internet.
You can subscribe to the Mavericks Outsider Report for free. Go to iTunes, click on podcasts, search for Mavericks, Mavericks Outsider, Mavericks Outsider Report, whatever makes you most comfortable. You'll see us there. You'll be able to subscribe for free. It'll be automatically downloaded to your iPod, your iPad, your computer, whatever it is that you like to use. It's going to be there for you automatically. Super easy, very convenient. You can take it on the go. If you're not an iTunes person, you can go to podomatic.com. and search for us there. That gives you options to subscribe manually via RSS or just browse some of the last 20 or so archive shows and listen to them at your leisure right there on your computer.
You might learn some stuff.
You
might.
Maybe.
The origin of the Azubuike bomb.
If you catch the right part of the couple of times when there was something educational presented. So definitely check us out there. If you have any other curiosity about our origin, Google Mavericks Outsider Report. You will figure it out. You'll find us there. You also want to look for us on Twitter. We like to interact with listeners or just Mavs fans, belligerent sports fans, people from the Dallas area, anybody. It doesn't matter.
Jamaica?
Spam bots. We don't care.
I don't talk to spam bots.
Try to avoid that.
Yeah.
Don't. If someone says free iPad, don't click on
it. I don't click on that.
Okay, good.
Or what about people who have unfollowed me?
Or people who have unfollowed
me. I don't follow. No, I don't click
on it. I clicked on it. Coop clicked on it, clearly, because he tweeted it like 5 times. I saw he clicked on it. I clicked on it to see what it was because I'd never seen that one before. And it was this real shady site. And so I was like, eh, I'm not going to do this. And so I closed it. And then it still tweeted me.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, well, that's whatever. Who cares?
Right.
I deleted the tweet, though, because it looked ridiculous.
Right.
I delete tweets. You know, a lot of people, they don't delete their tweet when they misspell. They just reiterate the old tweet.
Oh, I would delete.
I delete. I cover
Why
my,
would you do that?
Cover
Why would
my
you
tracks,
keep it?
Homeboy. Yeah. So anyway, like a day later, 2 days later, the damn thing randomly tweeted again. And I was like, yeah, this is
creepy.
I must have had a cookie that pre-authorized this thing. I went in there, removed it from my Twitter settings. Everything was good.
Technical with it.
So, yeah.
I just would have deleted Twitter at that point.
Don't click on things that worry you. Find us instead on Twitter. We will not inundate you with any kind of danger on the internet.
There's no spam bots with us.
I promise. I want you to find my man Brian Gutierrez on Twitter. Ballin' with Brian, B-R-Y-A-N. This gentleman has you covered on the Dallas Mavericks, the ins and outs of the day-to-day with the team. He's at practices. He's media availability before the game, after the game.
I'm being sweated on by Mark Cuban.
He's being sweated on by Mark Cuban on the treadmill.
He apologizes, though.
He's talking to players, coaches, folks in the organization as they're available. He's transcribing things that are said after and before the games. He's not tweeting every play. It's high-value Twitter coverage for the Dallas Mavericks, if you are so inclined. You can also follow me, Rylan, R-H-Y-L-A-N, Rowe, R-O-W-E, for...
General. You got baseball, you got basketball, you've got witty
Twitter
stuff,
hijinks,
just day to day.
General shenanigans.
It's good stuff.
And lots of sports tweets, primarily sports
pregnant
tweets.
Pregnant tweets.
Tweets about pregnant women that I'm married to. Not pregnant
More
women
than
in
one?
General. No, just the one.
Okay.
So there's that. And maybe most importantly, you can go to MavsFastBreak.com for supplementary coverage of the Dallas Mavericks from the Dallas Mavericks team. You've got Brian. You've got our man Earl K. Sneed. You've got several other contributors there. Original content, photos, articles. You can link to the Dallas Mavericks or Mavericks Outsider Report podcast as well from there. So go there. Check out what Brian's writing
There's
for the
team. There's no spam on there.
Absolutely no spam or who unfollowed me or anything else.
Yeah.
So check us out in all of those outlets and holler at us. And also, Ustream. Come to Ustream and watch the archive, listen live, whatever. We appreciate
it. If you're on the stream, you just saw the cover of the book.
Yeah.
You just saw the cover.
And you see, you know, when
the studio.
When the dog walks around.
You hear stuff about phones, landlines.
All kinds of crazy things right here at the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center. Anything can happen. So, yeah, we thank you guys for listening. Those of you who are on the live stream, as always, big props to you.
Big ups.
For those of you who listen on the podcast.
Big ups.
Big ups to you, too. Hey, big ups to anybody.
We love it.
Look, let's be honest here, okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we will see you on Sunday, April 22nd.
It is the 22nd?
I believe so.
Okay.
And until then, basketball for you.
Yeah. See you next Sunday.
Can't wait. Oh, let's go. Yes.
Isn't that the guy that either does or did a Mavericks blog?
There is a guy named Brian Gutierrez, but it's got to be a different guy.